It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis joins us. We're going to miss Stacy. She's not here this week, but don't worry. We still got Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land and Kevin Marks to talk about the Note 7. It's time to say bye-bye. Google Assistant, what it does and can't do, and why you might want a Google Home. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 374, recorded Wednesday, October 12th, 2016, somewhere between scandal and risotto. This Week in Google is brought to you by Away Luggage. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices, allowing you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off your order, go to awaytravel.com/twig and use the promo code TWIG at checkout. And by the all-new Basecamp 3. Discover a much calmer, more organized way to work with your team. Try it free at basecamp.com/twit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code TWIG. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest in anything we want. Don't be fooled by the name, kids. There is some Google in here, but there's also Facebook, Twitter, and media and everything else. Jeff Jarvis's wide-ranging intellect is part of the reason for that. Good to see you.
Actually, when we start discussing something obscure, you can look it up on Google, and that's why we call it This Week in Google.
Yeah, we Googled the answers. He's at BuzzMachine.com, writes many great books, teaches journalism to those lucky kids at the City University of New York at the Tau, what is it, the Tau School?
Tau Knight Center.
Tau Knight Center.
Real journalism.
Thank you for being here again, Jeff, because you were here on Sunday, and you're doing.
I was so delighted. Yeah, so I got as I'm sitting down in my family pizza, email comes in from Lisa. Help! We need guests. And so I was. I said yes. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
We had
slurped the wine.
Thank
and,
you.
And eat the pizza.
Ben Thompson in Taipei scheduled, and as you know, because of the time difference, it's early morning for him, and he just overslept. He slept through it.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, that's all.
So he's just like, man.
He felt bad, and we've rebooked him for next week, I think. But yeah. Kevin Marks is also here. He's in our time zone down there in Silicon Valley. Good to see you, the champion of the open web, the indie web, as he calls it.
That's right.
And well, love him.
I was thinking we could bring the Google Assistant into the conversation and have it listen in and suggest things as we speak about them.
Yeah, if only it were that smart.
Yeah.
Lisa and I have a mutual joke. Every time, now I've been using an iPhone since the iPhone 7 came out, and I try to use Siri. And every time I use it, and every time she uses it, and it comes back with a nonsensical answer, which is almost every time, she will say, "You have an unusual, what is it we say? I find your faith in Siri distressing." Also with us, Danny Sullivan, the king at Search Engine Land. Always a pleasure to have Danny. He's been watching Google since Google was just a little baby learning to walk. Little tiny baby.
Sometimes I would give it a little poke and watch it fall over and go,
"Oh, you're so cute, Google."
Danny would change Google's diapers. Oh. He knows Google's poop.
Oh, the stuff that comes out. Horrible.
Well, now Google is a behemoth, bigger and bigger all the time.
Yeah.
Last week, I guess, you probably talked about it on Wednesday, Google had its event, the October 4th event, announcing all sorts of new products. Some wag said a copy of the iPhone, a copy of the Roku, a copy of the Amazon Echo, and a copy of the Gear VR.
And a
copy of the Eero.
Very funny.
I think it's funny. It is all in a way. I mean, it's
kind of true, but kind of not. But,
yeah. Well, Google will add its own Google juice to it. Which could be tasteful or tasteless, depending, thoroughly disgusting, depending on your imagination. But I do think it's interesting that Google looks like it's copying Apple a little bit. It's a little bit of Apple envy has snuck in the sense that Google wants an ecosystem just like those boys down the road in Cupertino. In fact,
I think
The weird thing, well, I'll say one more thing and let you talk, Danny. The really interesting thing is, for the first time ever, Google has put features in the Pixel, its phone, that are not available to other Android users, particularly Google Assistant.
I mean, I think it's not that they want an ecosystem suddenly. They've wanted an ecosystem for a very long time. I think it's just that they're getting serious about the hardware, almost in the same way we see Microsoft getting serious about hardware. I mean, Microsoft pretty much didn't do hardware for the longest time, didn't make its own laptops, do all that sort of stuff. And now we have Surface stuff and everything, because the old model was you built the software and you partnered with other people. And Google built Android on the back of partnering up with other people. And to me, in a lot of ways, this is sort of like taking the gloves off. Like, well, I mean, you guys can keep doing Android phones and everything if you want and build your other devices, but we're going to build our own stuff. So, you know, we're going to, you know, everything from our own high-end phone to the, you know, Google Home voice assistant. The key interesting thing to me is going to be whether or not people actually buy it. Because today they really haven't been that successful with selling the devices themselves. And not that they don't sell them, but they just don't sell them in the numbers that people go, aha, and Google's the number one, number two hardware seller. You know, it tends to be Samsung. So will they actually sell these phones? And I've been watching the commercials. Goodness knows they're spending on the commercials.
It was like 2 million. What was a huge amount of money in the last 24 hours.
Oh, yeah, they're dumping the money. But I'm struggling to understand, like, what that commercial's telling me. Like,
those are the worst. Can I just say those are the worst commercials? It's the ones with the frame.
Yeah,
and it's like, I'm trying to figure out, what is that box? I can't see what's behind it.
My wife watched and I asked her. She goes, oh, that's clever. They're taking the search box and they're turning it into,
right.
I don't know.
That's what I thought, too.
And I'm like, does that make you want to buy the phone? She goes, well, I mean, I guess maybe it makes me think Google's more in the phone. Maybe. But and I'm watching and I'm just like, I don't even know what you're getting. Whereas when they were running those ads for Google Photos where the person's taking the picture and it stalls, it's like, oh, out of room. You're like, oh, that's a problem. I know I need to get that.
Yeah, that was a good ad. That was direct.
Yeah, so for me, the current crop of ads are just not expressing any reason at all why I think,
I agree with you.
You know what, I shouldn't get the Pixel. What would have been a good ad is if, like, you know, they were saying, get the Pixel, it won't blow up in your face. That would be very powerful.
Our phones don't blow up.
Yeah. What a feature. Anti-explosive technology.
I just think there's a risk that Google might, I don't know. I see Microsoft's done this. Apple's never had to do this. But Google might hurt the OEMs by saying, no, but we're going to make a phone that has capabilities yours cannot. Yeah.
Hold on.
That's the thing. It's not really true either. It's been confirmed more since. On Twitter, I asked whether I should buy the phone because the main selling point is it has AI, it has Assistant.
Right.
But there's nothing in the hardware that makes that required. And one of the stories in the rundown says, well, here's how you can put on Assistant on any Nougat phone.
Well, so, if you root it, that doesn't count.
No. But that's not because there's a capability in the phone.
There's no physical hardware. Right. That was your question.
No physical hardware.
Yeah, that's legitimate.
The Motorola thing, then.
Yeah.
So the Motorola phones had the extra chip that was listening all the time that let you do Google more easily.
It's not that.
There isn't something like that. It's just that they've wired something different.
But that's even more. But that is an even more aggressive thing. That means they're actually keeping something out of the Android code base. For competitive reasons.
Yeah.
Well, which is disturbing.
Well, it wouldn't be in Android anyway. It would be in the other piece, right? It would be in...
it's Google services. Yeah.
Yeah.
But even if you buy Google services for your handset, as Samsung, LG, HTC, and others do, you don't get it.
We're not keeping it out. We're just doing a very limited launch at the moment until...
Exactly.
You know, and it'll come to other providers. And, you know, I'm sure it'll make it to... You know.
By the way, the ad spend, I understated it. In the last 2 days, Google spent $3.2 million on those really bad ads for the Pixel and the Pixel XL. That's actually not a lot in a typical.
I don't think I've seen them.
That's one Super Bowl ad.
They're not good.
You're not watching the baseball playoffs.
I don't watch TV anyway.
You have to watch the baseball playoffs.
I'm not a real man.
Yeah. Well, we've known that for a while, ever since the operation.
Well, also, you've been in a state where they're only running elections.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I love you, Jeff.
Below the belt, metaphorically.
Literally.
I need them to sink that money into some more native advertising and movies until I see a TV show where on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. they're suddenly using all Pixel devices.
Yeah, look how well that worked for Windows Phone. For a while, every TV show had a Windows Phone in it.
But now they, I don't know, it might be working for Surface, though. I mean, the hard thing with Windows Phone is, like, why do you want to buy the Windows Phone? What are you going to run? Right. But with Surface, oh, my goodness, I can't keep flashing back to Under the Dome when I'd never seen so many Surface devices.
I know. It's funny.
Or just pop this thing up here. I just saw somebody, show the other day, I think it was, like, Blackish, where she was using her thing. The best thing was when she got done, she flipped it down and then left the kickstand sticking up or whatever, you know.
It wasn't how to use it.
It was like, how do I shut this to indicate I'm done? It's not a laptop, so I don't quite know what to do, but we gotta close the seat. I know, flip it down. But what about the kickstand? I don't know. Just
you know, ultimately, why those product placements backfire is because they stand out like a sore thumb because you never see anybody actually using those devices. So it's like, what are they using?
Yeah. Well, it's like, so Scandal, we had the Microsoft devices, and I thought that was just, they're in this parallel universe where we have Republican president, and they're Microsoft won the phone wars.
Right. It cracks me up. It's like, that's weird. What is that phone? It's
imagine
so strange.
Product placement on Seinfeld.
Was there? I don't think there was. Oh, wait a minute, cereals.
He had a Mac.
He had an old Mac, one of those little.
She never used.
SE30 or something.
Yeah. And then, of course, brand name cereals, lots of that.
And that bike.
But I think at that point, Apple wasn't doing paying.
Never used.
Apple never pays. That's Apple's, at least that's what they say.
Oh, yeah.
Apple says, oh, no, we don't have to pay. All we have to do is provide product. Because
but they also have a group that spends time providing that product, yeah.
Sorry, Kevin.
So they have a group that works with them to make it easier to film. So, you know, when I was there was a chunk of work to actually make the screens right at the right framework for film and things like that. So there was some, you know, much easier now with OCDs. But
they call that playback. And every TV show now has somebody who does that because designs the screens and does the playback. Because
Jerry used Mac. I'm betting that George had Windows. and surprisingly, Kramer knew Linux.
I think you're right. I want the Cosmo distro.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Note 7. This is sad. Today, the Wall Street Journal said Samsung is discontinuing the Note 7. It's done.
Hmm. Why do I have such sympathy for them?
I got one and turned it in, of course, because I never got a replacement. And the real problem
Why'd you want the Note 7 over the Edge anyway?
I have the Edge.
But why would you want a Note 7?
Because it has a stylus and a bigger screen.
Oh, is it that much bigger of a screen?
Yeah, noticeably bigger. And it was advanced technology. And I think we're learning. New York Times had a very good article, speculative somewhat, saying even Samsung doesn't know why these phones are bursting into flame. And obviously that's true. Otherwise, their replacement wouldn't have also burst into flame. There have been 6 cases in the U.S. alone.
The great quote in there, like, it's so advanced we don't.
The last line of the article, scroll down to the bottom, Karsten. The last line of the article is the phone was we rushed out a phone so sophisticated even we don't know how it works.
Yeah. Which is what the people who do AI say. So I suspect that there's AI in there deciding to kill us all.
Here's the quote. Samsung seems to have packed it with so much innovation it became uncontrollable.
That's gonna feed techno panic everywhere.
But I mean, this happens every now and then. Apple had a laptop exploding problem a few years back, didn't they? Remember that?
Who?
Didn't Apple?
No, Dell did. Dell had exploding batteries. Did Apple?
I've never heard of Apple's having anything.
There was one where the batteries would swell up inside.
If only there was some way we could quickly check battery.
Sorry, I was under the table or I would have responded. Yes, Apple did.
Oh, yes.
Apple did the swelling batteries. I had one. Sony has done a recall. Dell has done a recall. Apple has had phones even burst into flame, although it's been so rare that it hasn't had to issue a recall. It's a fundamentally dangerous technology, lithium ion.
It is.
But I feel so bad for, on the one hand, I feel bad for Samsung. But on the other hand, if they didn't really understand what was going on in the inside the battery, they obviously rushed it to get it out before the Apple iPhone 7, right?
Well, I wonder if there's some kind of a software. You know, one of the nice things about the Samsungs is how quickly they'll charge with those fast chargers or whatever. And I don't know the degree that that depends on the software that's monitoring how quickly you're throwing it in there, whatever. But it was interesting to find out it wasn't just the battery. Like, that was like, oh, it's just wrong battery. We use a different battery manufacturer. And actually, it looks like it's something much more than that. So,
which makes me nervous for every other phone out there, because it's some way the direction of, you know, somebody has a patent on something here that got misused.
You kind of want them to know what went wrong.
Yeah, phones. I'm sure all these phones would be perfectly fine, never kill us.
But that's the thing. Is that, you know, they did ship a lot of them, and a small number have caught fire. So the challenge is working out, testing them enough to find that case.
I get the impression, though, from the way that Samsung's doing this recall, including sending out special boxes.
Do you want those things in mailboxes?
No, and the box says contains potentially explosive lithium ion battery, not to be put on an airplane. And it has gloves in there. Now maybe that's an overabundance of caution, but it certainly indicates that the. You know, for a while they had an IMEI.
Did they really send you gloves?
They send you gloves. For a while they had an IMEI search where you could look up the IMEI number and say if your phone was okay or not. They abandoned that. They realized they thought the Chinese batteries weren't the problem. They abandoned that. And they've now not only recalled every single Note 7, told everybody who has a Note 7, turn it off. Do not turn it on. And they're not going to make them anymore, which tells me they're still baffled. They don't know what happened. That's scary.
How can I turn it off if I haven't received my important protective gloves?
They should say something like, go outside, put on some
product recall security theater and throw some gloves in there. That'll make it sound like we're really doing a good job.
Maybe, or maybe they really are.
If it's so dangerous to pick up your phone and put it into the box that they have to send you gloves, then you can't even touch the phone in any way, shape, or form. Like, you shouldn't have it in your house at all. Like, you can't even touch it to turn it off. I don't know. Unplug it with a pole or something, you know. They don't need the gloves.
I'm wondering if I don't know what's going on, kitty cat. I don't know what's going on.
So cat's trying to dial. Hang on.
Yeah. Yeah, if your Skype suddenly disappears. I feel bad for Samsung, but I mean, it's clear the Note 7 brand is dead. Even the Note brand is dead. Maybe even the Galaxy brand is dead. It's not going to impact Samsung because that's, you know, the mobile business, 5% of their business. Although I just saw that it's 2% of Koreans' exports. Korean exports are Samsung phones.
I've seen people say that this is going to kill the Samsung brand, but...
No, it's a bigger brand than that, but it's certainly not going to help the phone brand.
It's like the Galaxy phone is a good phone. There are a lot of people that are using them that are enjoying them.
Yes.
And so it's like I don't know that, you know, people are going to suddenly go, well, I'm never going to buy my Galaxy again. If you've been using it, it's been working fine, and you never got the Note. And the number of people using Notes are relatively small, so... You know, I don't know that this kills them. It certainly is a terrible black eye for them, though. Like, you know, this is not what you want to do when you're trying to expand against, you know, Apple.
Yeah.
But fortunately, Apple released a really kick-ass new phone with a lot of great features that are so different from the previous phones that we had.
It has the number one feature everybody's looking for. It doesn't burst into flame.
Yeah, that's it. That's what you... I agree with you, Leo. A phone that does not kill you is so much what people are looking for these days.
So much better than one that does.
So much better.
We shouldn't mock this. I mean, at least half a dozen people have been sent to the hospital. This is with burns and smoke inhalation. And apparently the gloves, I'm being told now at Gardner in our chat room, are for people who are sensitive to the ceramic fiber paper that this fireproof box is made of.
Oh, okay. I can go with that.
Yeah, because gloves aren't going to protect you from flame and explosion. It's hard not to make a joke about this, and yet this is not a joking matter for Samsung. This is life or death for Samsung.
So much money.
Well, and Google has to be thinking, well, we timed that Pixel release perfectly. The thing that is really true is that there's nothing like the Note 7 on the market. This was a phone that really was differentiated by the stylus, the fact that it had a 5.7-inch screen in a body that was smaller than the 5.5-inch screen of an iPhone. It was a beautiful phone. It worked really well. I loved the Note 7. It was absolutely the best.
How long did you use it?
Maybe, I don't know, like 2 weeks. When the first issues started happening, the initial thinking was, oh, this is only the phones with the Korean battery. And mine had, even though I got it from T-Mobile, had been made in China. And even the T-Mobile guy said, oh, you're probably all right because it's made in China. So I wasn't in a hurry. But you know what? As more and more cases happened, I thought, I'm not going to take a chance. And I got my money back. I didn't ask for an exchange. I got my money back. Partly because I was leaving the country, it wouldn't have made.
Did it ever feel hot? Did
never.
It make you different? No.
But the other reason this is a cause for concern, we talked a little bit about this with Steve yesterday on Security Now. He's kind of a polymath, an expert on everything, and he was talking about lithium ion batteries. And part of the reason this was of great concern to me is that many of these phones were not being charged when they burst into flame. But what Steve said, which was interesting, is that doesn't mean it wasn't the charging that was doing it. He said it's very possible that the charging itself began a process, perhaps short-circuited something that would then later result in combustion, you know, hours later. But it was concerning for me that these phones were bursting in flame, not when they were plugged in, but just when they were sitting in a pocket. That's really not good.
Yeah.
So just in case you are living under a rock, if you have a Note 7, Samsung has strongly urging everybody, they will completely reimburse you, that they will you know, send you your money back. They will send you a box. Best thing to do, bring it to the retailer, but if you bought it over online, they'll send you a box. They'll give you a credit, something like a $25 credit, and turn it off immediately. Just turn it off right now and don't mess with it. And they've decided not to make any more. Samsung has already cut $2.3 billion from its profit projections, which wipe out the profits, the entire profits of the mobile business for that quarter.
Wow.
Some analysts say the cost ultimately could go not only to $4 to $5 billion, but even more. In fact, Samsung's share price has lost $21 billion. So
you have to wonder, does that mean, is like, will we get a Note ever in the future?
I think not. That is a damaged brand.
Or do you bring back the do you call it the Galaxy Edge S?
You call it stylus. Incombustible 9. You call it something completely different. It's not related. And I think this is going to be a tough one for Samsung to come back from. It's not like there aren't lots of other choices. Just none of them with a stylus.
Yeah.
And the last phone that allows you to remove the battery, the LG G4, I'm sorry, G5, is probably going to be a premium product. You can actually take the battery out. All right, let's take a break. Actually, Samsung was in the Supreme Court on Tuesday arguing its case against Apple. I guess what they're really debating is whether that almost half a billion-dollar judgment was too much. But it's over the design patent, over the ability to make a phone that looks like an Apple phone. And Samsung already lost that case, but the question is, should they have to pay so much money for it?
I mean, tragically, though, Leo, the courtroom case was disrupted because someone screamed, "Look out! He's got a Note in his hand!
He's got a Note 7! Doc!"
There was a great tweet this morning. I think it was Charles Arthur, British journalist. I think it was his. It's just, quote, "And I leave to my son £1 million in currency locked in the vault with my Samsung Note 7.
Oh, man. You know you're in trouble when people are making, you know, jokes like that about your product. It's all over. It's just all over. Our show today brought to you by, I love this, luggage with a battery in it.
Oh, God.
But actually, it's a great idea. This is a carry-on from Away. Away luggage. It's made with a premium German polycarbonate. So it's very light, but very tough. This is a great carry-on. They also have a medium and large, all of them less than $300. But what I love about this is, look under the handle. By the way, these are the kind of luggage I always get nowadays, the four-wheel. They roll in any direction. That's the only way to go. When I see people kind of walking down the airport Carter with their luggage tilted because they only have two wheels. I feel sorry for them. This is luggage. You just kind of push it with your finger and it rolls along wherever you're going. But look under the handle here. This is awesome. There's a USB. There's two USB ports, and you've got a 10,000 milliamp hour battery in this. Awesome. It's TSA approved combination lock. It's built right in. It has inside a removable, washable laundry bag to keep dirty clothes separate from clean, and a lifetime warranty, and what? A risk-free 100-day trial period. I love sitting in the airport with my phone plugged into my carry-on because if I need a little juice, it's got it. And the thing is, it's such lightweight luggage. It does not feel heavier in any respect than my what I was used to use as a carry-on. This is just great. Let me unlock it here. It's got the TSA lock.
Yeah, open it up, Leo. So we had one of the founders of Away on
.NYC,
and they re-engineered it as they go. The stuff inside, they really thought through how to tamp your clothes down. Oops.
It's very, to me, the inside of carry-ons is just as important as the outside. And they've got all the little features I like, including this zip expandable bag, because that's where I put all the wires, right? All the chargers and stuff like that.
Most people put their underwear there, but you put the wires there.
Is that what that's for?
I don't know.
I always figured it's for electronics. They also have, and this is the compartment where you put your underwear, where it has the zip. It's hard for me to show this. I guess we don't have the over-the-shoulder shot today. But this is awesome. Anyway, Away luggage. So they're a New York City startup?
I think one of the founders was Warby Parker.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's right.
And so they really bring that kind of experience of looking for something that needs disruption. Suitcases generally suck.
Well, geeks really like. By the way, this is also impervious to coffee spills, and you'll like that.
Because you just proved it.
I just proved it. Awaytravel.com/twig. Enter the promo code TWIG, and you're going to get $20 off at checkout. And it's risk-free for 100 days. So look at the colors, that beautiful red. I'm getting that for Lisa. I've got the black. The polycarbonate shell is very, very tough, but also very, very light. And free shipping anywhere in the continental U.S. Go to awaytravel.com/twig and use the promo code TWIG at checkout for $20 off your order. Away Travel is a brand new sponsor, and we welcome awaytravel.com/twig. Make sure you use that offer code. We were talking before the show. People just basically, they go to Away Travel. We know this. They go to awaytravel.com, but we won't get credit unless you go to awaytravel.com/twig. So you want Jeff and everybody to get
you bet. Credit. They have a pop-up store in London right now. They had one in New York, and they had one in London.
Oh, nice. Yeah, because, you know, you kind of want to see this, but you could take my word for it. I am kind of that. One of my fetishes is luggage, bags and luggage.
Oh,
and
my God.
Right? You too?
Oh, my God, yeah. I had a bag room.
Yeah, I have a bag room now. I do.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Pens, watches, bags. I don't know what it is. There's something.
Leo, I really need to come up. We need to bond a
we
lot
should,
more.
We should do a bag thing.
Oh. My wife just hates my bags. Hates that I have them.
Well, you know, I'm of the Johnny Jet persuasion where if you cannot check bags, you're better off.
Oh, amen.
And, of course, they have bags that you can check, but this is a carry-on with all the features you want, including...
What's the longest you've ever gone just on a carry-on, Leo?
Oh, probably 10 days.
I've done 14.
Wow. But you must have laundry somewhere, right?
No. You just managed to...
Do you wash your... You're not a wash your socks out in the sink kind of guy.
You just wear black. There's no variety.
I don't mind wearing black, but what about laundry?
Jeans can go.
I use the air squeezy things.
When you get home, the jeans are standing up on their own, aren't they?
Well, yeah, but the air squeezy thing, that's what makes work.
No, then you can put more in there. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm all about the air squeezy thing.
And I use little tiny. When I luckily enough to fly business class, and you get the giveaway thing, and it has that little tiny toothpaste thing. You'd be surprised how many days you get out of one of those. So you don't need to carry tons of liquids. A little dab will do you on a lot of these things. And never carry shampoo because it's the hotel, all that kind of stuff.
We're getting great advice. Great advice.
Get everything down.
Okay, you know, Johnny Jett, who's a regular on the radio show, is also, you know, like you. He's like, how far can I go? without. All right. this just in. yeah, okay. Little behind the scenes thing here. Apparently, in spinning that four wheeled spinner luggage around, which I like, what I had neglected to note was that I had a cup of tea sitting right there.
How bad is the floor?
Well, the floor will absorb it. It's my clothing. The computer's fine.
Oh.
Mostly it's my pants.
And you're a pro, though. You kept going.
Oh, hey.
You didn't take a beat.
Oh, no. No, not me. Mm-mm. I stopped for nothing. No, actually, I'm kind of excited. I mean, this bag is awesome. I'm so excited.
It is. It is. They are great.
If you like to travel... Oh, here they come. who's got the mop? All right, we got that. It's all. That's no. That's good. It's fine. That's good. I only spilled one cup. I'm more sad about the tea than anything else. All right, yeah. Let's talk about Yahoo. Oh,
ay, ay, ay.
Yahoo.
What from one sad company to another?
Let's not.
Is it unreasonable for me to blame?
Let's not talk about them.
Is it? No.
Because why?
I guess you're right. Is it unreasonable for me to blame Marissa Meyer for this?
Well, she is the CEO.
For 2 years, they knew that the entire password user database was hacked.
I thought they didn't know for some amount of that time. I thought it happened 2 years ago, but then they didn't know. Is that they knew for 2 years?
Well, now that's a good question. I'm quoting Steve Gibson yesterday. Let me see if I can find the story.
Yeah, because I'm not.
They certainly knew for longer than they.
Yeah, I thought there were two shocking things: one, how long they didn't know, and then two, how long they knew and didn't tell. Could be wrong.
I mean, to be fair, it was the don't ask, don't tell policy that they were still operating under. They were not aware that if you didn't ask them whether or not you thought your password had been somehow vulnerably hacked, they felt they shouldn't tell.
Well, I don't know how. Okay, how long did Yahoo know? Does anybody know about the hack? That's only half of the story, though.
Yeah.
Because then the government came to them. Now, in their defense, mm-hmm. they had fought government orders before and lost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once that FISA court says it's okay, it's pretty hard to convince another court to say no, no. However, they not only did not fight it, they complied in an egregious fashion, completely bypassing Alex Stamos, who is now at Facebook, interestingly enough, and his entire security team to put what was effectively a rootkit. We had initially heard that, oh, no, we just modified the anti-spam filter to look for the signature the government was looking for. No, it was a rootkit. And in fact, when Stamos and the security team saw it, they thought they'd been hacked. And well, then the guys on the other side,
executives.
Yeah, said, "Oh, yeah, no, that was us."
Hey, no, never mind.
So let me see here. Yahoo, this is Fortune. Yahoo is under fire over cyber hack timeline. On Friday, Yahoo faced pointed questions about exactly when it knew about the cyber attack that exposed the email credentials of half a billion users. The largest hack of all. Bigger than MySpace. Bigger than Ashley Madison. Half a billion users. It has not provided a clear, detailed timeline yet.
But as soon as the deal with Verizon is complete,
yeah, then we'll tell
you. Done with the audit, they'll be happy to release that.
And Verizon, by the way, has already asked for $1 billion off. But I think it could be possible; it could scotch the whole deal. I'm sure this is enough cause for them to get out of the deal without any penalty. Verizon CEO says they're evaluating whether the Yahoo hack had, quote, material impact, end quote. This is in the Wall Street Journal. Rich Blumenthal, a Democratic senator from Connecticut, says, as law enforcement and regulators examine this incident, they should investigate whether Yahoo may have concealed its knowledge of this breach in order to artificially bolster its valuation in its pending acquisition. The Financial Times, which is reliable, said last week that Marissa Meyer knew of the breach in July. So maybe they didn't know for 2 years, but she knew many months before it was revealed.
Can I say, Leah, one of the reactions that came off of this, and Snowden, I think, was one of the people who said it as well, is like, delete your account. And
good luck trying to do that, by the way.
No, you can delete your account. I just wouldn't recommend you do that. I would go in. I would delete your emails. I would take out all the stuff you need to have. I would empty your trash and clear it all. But you also have to remember that Yahoo recycles emails.
Yes.
So when you delete your account, if it was, you know, whatever, Leo Laporte at Yahoo.com.
Good guess. That's exactly what it is.
Right. So you delete that, and then you delete it, and in a few years, potentially someone else comes over and gets that name. Yeah. And if you've left that linked with all your accounts, now Yahoo, and I guess Facebook does the same. You can look it up when this was getting more closely examined in like 2014. They apparently have systems that are designed to see like, oh, I'm getting an email, but we've never seen this before. Let's not send it because that was probably for the old person or whatever. But you know, at this point, do you really want to trust Yahoo's algorithms and Yahoo's got all this safety for you? I think you'd be much safer to just...
No, you're right.
Hibernate the account.
Yeah, you're right.
Danny, years ago, Yahoo just killed my email address.
They announced that they would do that if it was left fallow for any...
Irritated the hell out of me.
They'll take it.
It did get recycled and I had nothing to do with it. Because, hey, it was Yahoo mail, but not notified, nothing.
So you need to check in once in a while. What I did is I changed my password and turned on two-factor, which you can do. And that should be sufficient to protect you. The thing that's really scary is, yes, the passwords were hashed. We don't know how well or whether they were salted. But the secret questions were in the clear. And secret questions are, you know, it's...
Huge vulnerability.
First of all, I hate secret questions.
Yes.
And... people use the same secret question, same secret question answer all the time. So that
Blue.
Is a, yeah. What's your favorite? What street did you grow up on? What was the name of your first pet?
Maine.
Yeah, I recommend if companies insist on secret questions, screw them, because that's the worst security flaw ever. And B, don't use real answers. Use passwords, in effect, random.
And you never remember them.
No, and put them in your LastPass, your password manager. Put the question and answer, question and answer. You have to do that, otherwise. Well, I'll give you an example. So, starting with El Capitan, Apple has allowed two-factor on Apple accounts. Damn straight, I'm going to use that. So I get home and I'm going to turn on two-factor, and it said, "Okay, what street did you grow up on?" Okay, I put what I think was right. Who was your best friend in high school? When did I set these up? I don't remember this. I couldn't figure it out. Finally, I had to call Apple and said, "You have to reset these. I don't know what the answers are." And they then verified my identity in several, frankly, not very good ways, but to their satisfaction, and cleared the questions. So then I log in again and say, "Okay, good. Now I want to put on two-factor authentication." It says, "Sorry, you can't. Your account's been significantly changed. You have to wait." And the first it said 3 days, then it said 30 days. Now, I understand the delay, because if a hacker gets in your system, they're going to change things like that so you can't recover it. But 30 days? This is offensive. Now I have no secret questions, no two-factor, and I can't do anything about it for 30 days. What if I'd been hacked? Stop secret questions. Stop the insanity. And frankly, I have to think Yahoo knew before they revealed it. There's lots of evidence. No smoking gun, but head of security who had left said, "We think they knew." He ran a guy named Jeremiah Grossman, who was head of security. He's currently head of security strategy at InfoSec, but he ran security for Yahoo until 2001. He said, "I also don't think that the claim that the attacker was state-sponsored makes any sense, because state-sponsored hackers don't usually go then to sell the data on the internet."
Unless they're trying to make it seem like they're not a state-sponsored hacker, and that's designed to throw you off.
Yahoo did not encrypt the security questions. Some are readable in plain text. Just hope you didn't use the same security questions and answers somewhere else. That's depressing. So bad. Yahoo really has gone from one of the pioneers of the internet to...
Oh, it passed that stage long ago.
Did it? All right.
Yeah. I think I agree with Danny. There's not too much cause for wistfulness here.
No. Not anymore. And what makes me sad, though, is I had some respect for Marissa Meyer. Now I'm starting to think, maybe she really did not do a good job there. Mm-hmm. All right.
Danny looks like he's getting ready to put on fighting gloves.
Can you see that?
What is that you're wearing?
I can't even see myself.
What are you wearing?
It's my PBS USB key thing.
Oh, it's a wrist. It's a bracelet USB key?
Yeah, I got it like it.
You got it from PBS?
Kids got it. You wear it. Don't
accept USB keys from strangers. Don't you know anything?
Look, it's PBS. How could that be bad? Look, it's fine. It's got a little smiley kiss. It's PBS Kiss. There's nothing wrong with that.
Do not plug that into any machines.
So while we're talking about security, can I bring up something?
Yes.
It's all good. It's okay.
Go ahead.
So the WikiLeaks latest Podesta hack, I put a few links up. There's Zeynep Tufekci, Glenn Greenwald, Nick Confessori from the New York Times. There's been some interesting discussion online about journalistic standards with these kinds of leaks. And, the general journalistic view is, hey, if it's out there, it's all fair game. It's journalism, Sony hack, Podesta hack, whatever. Let's go mining. Let's go find stories. That's what we do. But things have changed from the time that kind of ethic arose. One, a hell of a lot more is stored in ways that can be stolen. Two, a lot more is stolen at scale. Three, there are national agents like North Korea and Russia doing the stealing. And so the question I have for you all is, does journalism have a culpability here for creating a demand? Let me explain that real quick. So if you're Reuters or the Associated Press and there's a really dangerous war zone, they decide not to buy any freelance material whatsoever because they don't want to create a demand that would send freelance journalists into danger. They recognize the creation of demand as a responsibility. So in this case, every time media crams onto the stuff, so for example, Epicurious, the food site, used part of the Podesta hack, or not hack, not the word, the Podesta theft.
Wait a minute. Don't tell me. How could Epicurious...
Tips on good risotto.
from Podesta's emails.
Yeah. I'm not sure who it was from. So the question is, by the way,
the irony of all this, and I agree with you, this is a larger conversation we should have.
Yeah.
But the results of these leaks are the tamest things I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Hacked emails, here's The Intercept, show Hillary Clinton repeatedly praised Walmart.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, what else? Well, it probably was in a speech for Walmart, I would guess, but I'll have to read that for the smoking gun. behind closed doors, Hillary Clinton sympathized with Goldman Sachs over reform. Okay, that's a bad one. I thought Glenn Greenwald wrote an interesting article, which we'll talk about.
Goldman Sachs was the gold standard
of
the finance industry for many years. It only became besmirched fairly recently in history.
Right.
So it creates this kind of demand, and Zeynep Tufekci, who's brilliant, absolutely amazing.
I think it's a very fair question.
This causes a problem for people who are dissidents with even greater fear that there's a market for hacking and theft and exposure, and that innocent people are going to be brought into this more and more and more.
Let me ask you, a good question. And then just let me ask you, as a professor of journalism, about the journalistic ethics. Is there an ethical behavior when it comes to using material gained illegally?
The standard has always been, as long as you did not participate in that legal activity to get it, fair game.
So when Gizmodo gets an iPhone, that was, let's say, stolen, that's okay. If they pay for the iPhone,
if they took part in that,
that's in a way that makes you an accessory, right? You're paying for
it.
If
they caused it, if they caused the theft to happen, if they motivated.
So after the fact,
you're right, that creates a demand too. But yeah, it's a little bit different.
Okay.
So their first standard is, I mean, because otherwise, Pentagon Papers was illegal. Snowden was illegal.
Leaks are always illegal.
They're often illegal. So we can't have that standard that if it's illegal. So what Zeynep proposes is a standard that says that there's, you know, national concern about this, that it's truly a scoop. It's a scandal. Is there a scandal line? So in the case of the Sony hack, which is another great example, there were all kinds of things that were juicy and fascinating, but that we really didn't have a right to know. There wasn't
That was also, as we believe, state-sponsored by North Korea.
You're
going
to do that, but it's kind of laughable. I mean, I'm on Memorandum like every day, if not every hour, which is like the political version of Tech Meme. And there are publications on there that I've never heard of that, you know, but are known in certain circles, both left-wing and right-wing, and they're going to publish whatever they want. So they don't, like, the New York Times could decide, well, we're not going to publish this because it was in this thing or whatever, but that doesn't mean someone else isn't going to pick it up.
Okay, but
and start running that becomes it. And a ultimately, Trumpian. And ultimately, it will turn into a news story if it turns out that it's a big enough thing.
Okay, so two things about that.
Like, hey, I got a risotto recipe, and they hate risotto, and they're going to publish it. Maybe nobody really cares. It doesn't pick any legs, but if it does pick up some legs, then that becomes, you know, an issue.
Yeah, well, there's two things there.
I just don't know that you get to put all that stuff back into the.
You don't. But so two things. One is there's a Trumpian argument there. Well, if everybody else is doing it, then what stops me from doing it? Right? If everybody else has locker room talk, then I'll have locker room talk too. That's a seventh grade kind of argument, I think, that doesn't hold water. And second, that yes, obscure sites can publish it, but the New York Times unquestionably brings a lot more attention to it. CNN brings a lot more attention to it. They do have a responsibility in that line. So that's where we go to Zeynep's standard. If it's a scandal, and one can argue it's a scandal for, you know, American government spying on its own citizens without real permission is a scandal. And so that deserves to rise up. So the question is, should responsible news organizations hold themselves to a responsible definition before they choose to join in the revelations that were stolen? What say you now, Mr. Sullivan?
I think the definition should be you cover things that you think have a substantial public interest in being covered.
Okay, good. Which does not mean risotto recipes.
No, I mean, what do I care about a risotto recipe?
Right.
But, I mean, on the other hand, with Epicurious, it's like you – if I were Epicurious and I'm like, see, there's a risotto recipe, it's kind of funny.
Oh, it is kind of funny. No, it's not that
sensitive. It's not like I'm revealing his nude photo doing risotto or whatever, right?
There should be a standard of a public's the public interest. I mean, I'm sure that standard, that's part of the standard, right?
Yeah.
Is the public's right to know?
The view kind of is that if it's interest is very broadly defined. Would somebody be interested in
That's not what I mean by public interest.
I know, but that's the standard that's being used. The
that's too bad.
The standard being used is, should the public know this?
Yeah, no, I think that's the higher...
that's interesting.
Yeah, see, I would hold it to a higher standard that it has to be something that, like the Pentagon Papers, that the public has a need to know or a right to know, because I don't think risotto recipes count. I think any entanglements that Hillary Clinton has with political donors absolutely satisfy that standard. There's the additional
just to throw it out here. If you have the Russian government enabling these hacks,
That's what I'm about to throw in. Then there's the additional calculus that you have to make. Is this a foreign government trying to impact our election? But I don't think that's the responsibility, let's say, of The Intercept to make that decision. You're saying they should consider the provenance of the information. Not the legality, but the provenance of the information, who got it and what their intent was.
That's what I'm asking.
I don't think they should consider that. I think they need to look at the information.
If you go back to Epicurious, the reason that they are running that article had nothing to do with a public interest thing. It had everything to do with SEO and can I get a lot of traffic.
Of course.
The headline is WikiLeaks October surprise. So someone
recipes.
And then it's colon, you can't rush risotto. So there's someone going, hey, there's a lot of people interested in WikiLeaks and this October surprise, probably trending on Google. How can we tap into it? Let's go ahead and do this, right? And it's cute and it's clever that they found it or whatever and they've come up with it or whatever, but you know, all that was designed to do with
That's fine. I think but I think there is this larger question of whether, let's say, The Intercept or The Washington Post should consider not merely the legality. We've settled that. That's not an issue. The provenance, who got it, and then the intent.
Why?
And I think they do not need to. If they can verify that the material is real, that would be important because there's some concern that maybe the Russians – they did not. I don't think so. But there's some concern the Russians might have modified this.
Yes.
And apparently they did not. WikiLeaks, by the way, says no. That's one of the things we want to be very clear about.
I'm not exactly trusting Assange.
Apparently has an agenda too, but okay. Yes. But I don't think the Intercept or the Washington Post should consider the agenda or the provenance of material. Well, if they don't have to consider the legality of it.
They're being manipulated.
So what? If the information is what matters.
One side, not the other.
No, but it doesn't matter. The information is what matters. And if somebody handed you something incriminating about a presidential candidate, you're not going to consider whether, you know, NBC or the Washington Post had a secret agenda revealing the Billy Bush Donald Trump tape. You're going to consider the content of the tape and its import for the American people, for your readership. That's what's important.
I think you're also going to look at things overall. If you have somebody who decides every single day they're going to do a press conference and there really is nothing new in that press conference hey, every time I do a press conference, you guys will come cover it. At some point, if you're a news organization, you might just say, you know what? It doesn't matter what the content of the individual press conference is. We think we're being played, so we're just not going to cover the
Chuck
press conference.
Schumer, Senator of New York, every Saturday or every Sunday, he holds a press conference, and dutifully the TV stations come out.
Here's the standard: is the information of interest of import to our audience? If it is, then if it's every Saturday, it's every Saturday. But the standard it has to rise to is this has to be important. I don't think you should. Here's one of the reasons I don't think you should consider intent. It's so hard to measure intent. That is a really difficult thing to know. That's why we have a criminal justice system and advocacy and juries, because intent is very difficult to determine.
I measure intent all the time as a journalist. I get press releases that are sent to me mm-hmm. where you can tell they're just sending you out a press release.
Yeah, but if there were information like, there that was of interest and important. But that's what I'm saying is all you should need to do is say, is there information that my audience should or needs or know to know, not wants necessarily, but needs to know. And it doesn't matter then how it came to you.
Well, but I hesitate to use this word because it's misused all the time of balance. And I don't mean balance in terms of false balance. But there is a point at which all the leaks are aimed to destroy one side. And we end up playing along with that. And in the end, is there an informed public becomes a standard too. And the public is hyper-informed about that guy's bad stuff, but not at all informed about that guy's bad stuff, which we also know is there, but we can't get a hold of because the Russians didn't leak it or the North Koreans didn't leak it. Then we're doing an imbalanced
job. Then you should redouble your efforts to find that other stuff.
Fine, easy to say.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying that if there's a smoking gun in those documents, if Hillary Clinton said, thank you for your $100,000, I'm going to make sure that your interests are protected by me in the White House, that would be – and you wouldn't release that?
If the standard is very, very high – no, if the standard is that high of true scandal, yes, that is passed. It's this layer below that says, well, that would be of interest. Yes, they should know that. Yes.
Well, admittedly, those are judgment calls at that point.
Between scandal and risotto.
Yeah, somewhere between scandal and risotto.
Somewhere. Right?
Yeah, but I think the line should be judged by its import, not by its provenance or the intent of the provider. That's my only point.
I just think it can be a factor.
What you do is you do a sidebar that says, by the way, this material came to us, we believe, and the federal government believes, from the Russians, who, according to this, have an interest in the election going in a particular way.
And they just played us like a violin.
And, well, you should say that as a sidebar, but it doesn't mean you should sit on the material. I think you got to trust the public and you got to give, you cannot sit on material information. You cannot. regardless of its source.
We're doing a reverse Leo here.
I believe this one. This one I'm serious about.
Usually it's the opposite role playing here.
All right.
I'm trying to press this question and see where are these
lines. What do you think? Have I made my case?
Yeah, no, you have. But it's still troubling because we in media can cause demand that Putin can know how he can play us, and anybody who cooperates can play us. And we play to a script, and we end up being their pawns.
To some degree, you already, like, you can go to any number of sites, or even our own site will say, then it's got a tip, let us know. Right. I've read articles on leaks, and they're like, if you have secret emails, send them on to us. You have journalistic organizations asking. This isn't even new.
I acknowledge.
That's the whole point. You find some source to leak you some things. Anytime you get these people in Washington that are like an unnamed source who we cannot name because they weren't able to disclose this, i.e., they weren't supposed to talk about it at all. That's the nature of
that's a source.
Journalism.
That's called a deep throat.
So I get what you're saying. I still think the public interest thing is the thing you look at, but.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you weigh all these factors. It's not a perfect world.
Yes.
I agree.
The other factor that occurs today that's different from 10, 20 years ago is, to state the obvious for our audience, there's huge amounts more data that is now stored and stealable and stolen than was ever possible before. We didn't have 10 years of emails stored before.
Yeah, no, technology changes everything. Absolutely.
And so the part of what Zeno's point is, I think, that the vulnerability of more and more people who wouldn't have been vulnerable before,
right.
Now anyone who has their email on Yahoo could be vulnerable to things being exposed about them. And
well,
if that person is doing something that if they are a person at risk for some reason, then they are now at a multiple of risk versus you or me or other privileged people.
No, and to answer your original question, I think one must be very careful not to incent dangerous behavior. And I think the tech tie-in on this has to do with the discovery of exploits and flaws in software. Mm-hmm. You've got to be very careful. And Apple, for instance, has been very careful not to pay, until recently, bounties for exploits because they didn't want to encourage people to find exploits, right? They wanted to minimize that risk. But once there was already this marketplace for exploits, Apple had to participate. And in fact,
right. The
dollar amount now to be paid for exploits has gone up to $2 million in some cases. They're that valuable. If you have a zero day that can unencrypt an iPhone worth $2 million, and the moral hazard there is now you really are getting a lot of people going out and looking for these flaws. I think on the one hand, that's not a bad thing since if they do exist, we want to root them out. The bad thing is that they often don't get given to Apple. They're given to some state actor to use against dissidents, and that's terrifying. Good article, by the way, and then we'll move on because what did you think of Glenn Greenwald's article in the Democratic Echo Chamber, Inconvenient Truths Are Cast as Putin Plots? He's actually being very critical.
Yeah, this is a very complicated story because this is also where Kurt
Eichenwald,
I felt like those two were just having a little fight back
little
and
tiff.
Forth. And
yes,
so
they are.
High
they
level.
Are. Exactly.
Like,
and I didn't want to read it, but I read it and because I thought it was my duty to read it and understand Glenn's point. And I think Glenn does have a point.
Did you also read Eichenwald's piece?
In response, yes, of course.
Well, actually, no. I think Eichenwald actually wrote the first.
The first one, yes, I did read. That's, in fact, I read. I didn't want to read Glenn's piece because I liked Kurt's piece so much. I liked Kurt's vision
first,
of the world.
His first piece had such a confusing headline on it. Like, I'm, yeah. you know, yes. like going, what? What? It's like.
He says, I am not Sidney Blumenthal. What?
Yeah, all I needed was a thing saying, hey, they're saying Sidney Blumenthal said this, but he didn't say it. They're just quoting my story.
He's saying the Russian news agency Sputnik.
I know, but then
misinterpreted one of the WikiLeaks emails.
They got a heads up and all this other speculation that comes in, and it seemed like Glenn was coming and saying, "Whoa, all this other." And it's like, can we get back to the main point that was undisputable? Someone quoted something that was not from Sidney Blumenthal that got stated as if it was.
Right.
Let's just clear that up. That's all we needed.
Yeah, and
right.
Glenn was concerned, I think, about the veracity of WikiLeaks being challenged, and in fact, Eichenwald wasn't directly doing that. So it got that got all – Danny, you're right. It got all then into, mixed
well,
up in the whole
clearly not, like, he's clearly not happy with a lot of the suggestions that this wasn't – like, I think everybody's fairly certain, and I think I guess Clinton at one point said, yes, these were real emails. But it was this whole, let's play it up as if we don't confirm it, then we don't have to acknowledge if they were that or whatever. Because, you know, you clearly have this bad blood now between WikiLeaks and the Clinton campaign. Oh, what
well, that's not new. I mean, Assange said months ago, I hate Hillary Clinton and I want to do everything I can to defeat her. So right. that's nothing new at all. He sees her as a hawk and a warmonger. But
there are also sort of modified versions of the emails going around as well.
Are there?
And I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure any press byline has done them, but there's definitely variations on a theme being circulated that. Well, Snopes is flagging up continuously.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank God for Snopes and PolitiFact and all these other fact-checking organizations.
Yeah, but you may be seeing what's emerging. The next thing is like the anti-leak. It's like if you have a leak and then you get the polluted data out there, either deliberately polluted or whatnot, then people don't even know what to believe anymore. And then suddenly idea that we have leak, you can't even know if you want to trust it.
Well, we're really
I don't know whether this is tech news or not, but breaking news is that the CEO of Wells Fargo is resigning.
Good.
Good.
Rightly so. Of course, he was castigated by, who was it that yelled at him in the
Congress? Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I thought so. Elizabeth Warren, God love her, said, how dare you? He was, of course, CEO at Wells Fargo when they incented or somehow encouraged their employees to basically steal from their customers by creating fake accounts without their knowledge, things like that. Good. He should. We got to start seeing some of these guys take the fall for this really reprehensible behavior. So few of these. Good. Stumpf.
You might say he's been stumpfed.
He's been stumpfed. Let's take a break. Do want to talk about some other tech stories. I'm sure there are some. I know what I want to talk about. Twitter.
Oh, that.
Great article about what's going to happen to Twitter, I thought.
Why?
I'll tell you when we come back. How about that? Stay tuned.
It's called a tease. He's just teasing you.
I hope it survives.
Really? I hope it dies a miserable death. So we could talk about that, too.
But we had that discussion 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I have it every week, it seems. No, you know what? I maybe modify my standing on Twitter just because it's so fun to read Twitter during this election campaign. It's full of information, but you don't need an account to do that, right? You could just read it, and I think maybe that's the best way to consume Twitter. If you haven't made an account, don't.
Well, we'll get back to that because that's hard.
Is it? You can't just read the timeline? Oh, yeah, because you need to choose who you're going to follow, don't you?
And that's part of their failure, which is why they probably need to just make it so you can consume the news, which might be part of why we're getting the new Explorer tab. Breaking news. But we can come back.
Stand by for news. Hello, Americans. Time to talk to you about news. So many of you, I know, listen to our shows to learn about products, how technology can help you get your job done. Here's one you really got to check out. I'm sure you've heard about Basecamp. Everybody knows about Basecamp. I love Basecamp. I am a huge fan of Basecamp. Going back to Jason Fried and David Hanemeyer Hansen, David wrote Ruby on Rails to create Basecamp. The company was originally 37 Signals. They renamed themselves to Basecamp. Basecamp is the best way to get teams on the same page, to have people working together, communicating together. And they've just done the third iteration, Basecamp 3, taken everything they've learned from, it must be almost a decade now, of Basecamp and put it in the new version that's great. Basecamp, what is it? All right, it's a private, secure space online where teams can stay organized. They can discuss everything they need to get a project done. It's so much better than email or chat or messaging because you've got all the tools in one spot. Message boards, file storage, to-dos, chat schedules, automatic check-ins. It's all in there. It's perfect for internal collaboration. But you know what's great about Basecamp? You can also invite clients in and control what they can see. So you still have your private space, but clients can see what they need to see on an ongoing project, something you're working on for them, which is really great. Over 100,000 companies use it, but I think a million companies should use it. That's my goal right now, is to get you and your company to use it at basecamp.com/twit. And it says to sign up for a free trial, but can I tell you, there are no per-user fees. They don't charge you by the seat. You can add as many people as you need inside and out of the company without worrying about licenses and seats. Anybody who needs to use it can use it, and you don't pay a penny more, and you're going to love their straightforward, all-inclusive pricing. Look at this, $29 a month. That's it. For internal teams, if you want to use it with clients, $79 a month. That's it. No matter how many users, that's it. So I'm not talking a big expenditure here. And you can try it without even paying that, just to see. Last week, 8,757 companies got started with Basecamp 3. Let's make it 8,758. This is going to really change the way you face the workday. You can set up your own work notification schedule. So notifications, I was talking to Jason Fried. I love him. I don't know if you've read his books, Rework and so forth, but he really thinks about how work gets done. And we were talking about how the problem is now work is 24/7. I said, I don't want something. He said, no, you know what? You set your work hours in Basecamp and you can say, I'm not working. Don't bug me till I go to work. So you're back in control of your projects. Makes your workplace calmer, more productive for everyone. I love it. You're going to love it too. Basecamp.com/twit. Make sure you go there so that they know you heard it here and you could try it for free. Basecamp.com/twit. It solves so many problems. You know, this was the problem we had. When you start out and you're small, it's easy. You got 10 employees, 5 employees. Everybody can talk to everybody else. And then there's a point, I think for us it was around 20 employees, where it doesn't. You suddenly things start to spin out of control. You don't know who's doing what. And you need a way to kind of bring it all back in. And Basecamp is such a good solution. Basecamp.com/twit. It'll take the pain out of it for you. So, Twitter. Disney's not going to buy it. Google's not going to buy it. Apple's not going to buy it. Increasingly, doesn't look like Salesforce is going to buy it.
I think you should buy it for the brand.
If I could afford it, and actually if the stock price keeps going down, maybe I will. Who is going to buy it? I read a great article today by a finance guy. And his conclusion was the reason no big company can buy it is because of the evil thing they're going to have to do the minute they get it, which is to recover $500 million a year in expenses, fire a lot of people. So it's going to be a hedge fund guy. It's going to be, or an investment group that doesn't have a name that can be tarnished.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing you're going to have to do, so Twitter makes $2 billion revenue, but is losing money. You have to cut the fat so that Twitter can make money.
Well, that's easy to do. You don't have to worry about getting your name tarnished. First of all, you're going to cut all your salespeople because if Google bought them, you have an existing sales team, so you're going to like lose a lot of your salespeople. This happened with Microsoft when they did the whole Yahoo deal. One way or the other, like salespeople went. And no one's gonna cry over the salespeople, which is terrible because salespeople keep us all in business. So I would be sad, but you know, like I don't know who they think are gonna give them a black eye. Plus, like companies lay people off all the time, and it doesn't like collapse. It's like that really. If Twitter,
well, you don't want to be Disney. You want to be Disney that bought Twitter and then fired 10,000 employees.
I guess Disney. How could Disney have ever had Twitter, given the brand damage?
Yeah, and that's another reason.
It just doesn't make it. That never made the slightest.
Google sense. Makes sense because Google could really use all the data and the signals and that
Facebook
information.
Facebook makes sense.
Facebook, maybe Facebook. Facebook's probably got everything that's on Twitter, right?
There's an art. No, there's. I put up something on the rundown that argues that Facebook has complementary data.
Is Google definitely out of the running?
They say they don't want it. But who knows, right?
Did they really? So they like. So no one wants Twitter right now, right?
We'll see how low the price can go now.
Well, I think they don't want it at that price. That's kind of.
Well, and as the stock keeps taking a hit,
But the Salesforce one, I argued that that could make some sense for Salesforce.
Yeah, but all the shareholders are emailing Mark Benioff saying our dead body.
Kevin,
well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't even understand why. I mean,
yeah, explain how it makes sense, Kevin.
It makes sense in that it's a very good channel for companies to talk to their customers, and that's the piece that that's the thing that Salesforce already does with it, and they've got some connections there. So it's also a great source of, as you say, advertising and marketing materials and things like that as well. So there is some correlations with Salesforce's business there, but I'm not sure it's enough for them to spend that much money, because they don't actually have that much money. You know, they would have to do some kind of rights issue to do it.
John Hempton, writing for Bronte Capital at brontecapital.blogspot.com, says, here's who should buy Twitter: a Wall Street bastard. Some Wall Street bastard armed with a lot of debt. That bastard will fire a lot of people, and that's who needs to buy it, because they can do what needs to be done, which is the really hard stuff of cutting costs. Revenue is $2.5 billion a year. It could easily run on $250 million in costs. That's what he says, and I think he's probably right. He says, if you can't make this have a 40% operating margin, then you're inadequately brutal. So expect it to be bought by a Wall Street bastard.
Yeah, I totally don't buy into this idea that some big company can't buy them because they would have to make heartless layoffs.
It's the brand.
Companies do this all the time. They lay people off all the time.
But they would be, he says, insufficiently brutal. They'd lay off as few people as they thought they needed to.
I don't even know that would be the case. And it's like, if you were Google and you were buying Twitter, you might decide that you don't need to lay people off because you don't even need to make that much money off of it. You have a lot of cash coming in from other things. You might think this is perfectly fine. We'd take our time with it.
Google's just biding its time, waiting for the stock price to tank? Even more?
I don't know. I mean, I think Google personally, and I don't have any inside knowledge on here, so, you know, for what you could do, I just suspect that Google just doesn't really want to get messing around with anything social. They burnt themselves badly.
Good point, Plus.
Then we go and get Twitter, which has got problems. Yeah. And then if it doesn't grow despite everything that they do or whatever, then it's like, oh, look, Google screwed up in social again. And it's like, at this point, it's like, nah. In contrast, it would be entertaining perhaps for Google to watch Facebook actually put in a bid, because then if I were Google, I'd immediately launch an antitrust challenge. Not directly. I'd get someone to do it for me, and I'd probably be successful in blocking that deal and causing Facebook to burn some time and energy on Twitter and cause Twitter to kind of drop down and kind of get messed up with it from there.
You think there's some urgency to get this deal done, though? Isn't Twitter slowly losing users and cachet?
Well, they've got lots of money in the bank. They haven't got a burn rate that's going to destroy them. Their challenge is they gave a metric that was based on growth, and they haven't been growing. So now they're trying to revise that and come up with other metrics they can persuade Wall Street about, which is the point about the live TV stuff. So the fit with Google is around YouTube. That was the thing I said last time we discussed it. Twitter has been doing gangbusters good work with the live TV. They had millions of viewers of the debates, and they had huge amounts of traffic there.
Something weird goes on now when I go to Twitter. For some reason, I'm getting Bloomberg technology feeds in my ad blockers blocking it. So I guess it's an ad, right? Why am I getting this live video?
It's just video. Just enjoy it.
just be thankful. I mean, it used to happen to me when I went to Bloomberg site. I hated that. Now it's happening to me when I go to Twitter. Is that just me?
I'm not seeing that. Let me look.
Maybe it's just me.
Show us again.
But what are you?
Wait, give me your.
No, I'm not clicking anything. This is going to Twitter.com.
Scroll down a bit. Okay.
Twitter.com. Above the trends, I'm getting live video from Bloomberg.
Yeah, I don't get that.
And a scowling Trump.
You must be on a little display. You must be in a little. You must be in a little test.
You're in a test bucket.
Well, I don't like being in this bucket.
But hang on, I want to screenshot that so we can write an article. Go back and show me that again.
Okay, screenshot that. I'll take my mouse out of the picture.
Just give me a minute here. Give me
a good screenshot.
Get my sketch going here.
Is it going to come with the sound up, Leo, or down?
Do you hear sound, Carson?
Oh, I can hear sound. Why is that sketch not going? Oh, there we go. Here we go. Hang on.
This is the most annoying thing. I hate it when I go to Bloomberg's site, but bad enough.
Make sure I get your profile in there. Ooh, Rogue One's trending. Okay, gotcha.
Rogue One is trending?
Why is Rogue One trending?
Because Steve Kovac is talking about it. What is Rogue One?
Oh, no, there it goes. What is Rogue One?
Is that a Star Wars thing? Oh, it's the new movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, says Danny. Yeah.
Not really. I'm a Star Trek guy. I don't care about Star Trek. Star Wars. See, I don't even follow.
San Francisco Trends. Okay.
So you don't get Bloomberg in your home feed.
Was that Twitter.com or Twitter.com/Leo LeBlanc?
No. Twitter.com. Well, because I'm logged in. Oh, my God. Quick. Get your blaster, Luke.
Rogue One's going to be the new Star Wars thing. And they're going to get the secret plans. And they're going to get all the, you know.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Oh, I just.
What makes Danny such a pro is that he got the headset.
I just got it too.
At the same time.
What do you get?
Mine's on the right. I have it on the right. Yeah.
You get it too?
Yeah.
What'd you get?
Bloomberg.
I have it on the right.
I want it.
On the left. I just
How
refreshed
come I don't
and
have
appeared
it?
Above trends.
Yeah, just go to Twitter.com, not Twitter.com/.
Yeah, it's my front page because it's my feed. I'm logged in.
I have it now.
We all have it.
It's deployed to the data centers. Breaking news.
Now, if it were Rogue One, I wouldn't mind, but I don't.
My video. Let me just, you know.
Isn't on TV. Is this Bloomberg technology? This is an internet stream that they do?
Yeah. But Bloomberg was who's doing the debates for them as well. That was they were doing that as a partnership with Bloomberg.
So this is like
this is going to happen on your Facebook page. I guarantee they're going to promote video on everybody's homepage. I hope they get rid of that stupid trending that doesn't work. And they're going to promote video. And I bet it's going to be live video.
It's auto starting. I don't know if it's auto playing the audio. That would be really bad.
It's not playing the audio. No.
Good.
Oh, okay. No, it's not. Even if I mouse over, usually if you mouse, if it's not autoplay audio, but I mouse over, it's giving me a watch button.
Yeah.
If I hit the watch
button, all it is just basically a moving ad that if I push the watch button, I'll get audio, I would presume.
Yep. Okay, so when you hit the watch button, it does open up in a new window and the audio is on, of course.
Yeah.
Whether or not these things are going to materially add to the...
Goodbye.
but what if it was us in there?
That was important. What was that important? How come
I would never do that. I would never do that to anybody. That's horrible.
How am I? Well, no, I'm getting different live video.
They did this with the Thursday night football. They did this with the debates. They put a little thing in the feed and said, the debates are starting now. Do you want to watch it?
You got peanut butter in my Twitter feed.
No, this is exactly what I was talking about. So I'm saying Twitter's doing a play for live video with commentary. They've done it with the event.
Oh, all right. But see, I usually do it myself. I'll have the debate on the TV, and I'll run TweetDeck, and I'll because Twitter unaccountably does not live scroll, but TweetDeck does, and I'll just sit there and watch it scroll through.
But the version of it they have in the app shows you the debate and the hashtag that goes with it. So the hashtag is going by, which is arguably less useful. I'd like to be able to see the people that I'm following, but I can see how that makes sense as a tool for people who aren't using Twitter much.
So, Danny, what's your scoop? There's a new Twitter feature coming?
Oh, they're doing something. It hit tech meme. It was like not my scoop, just the scoop I saw. That they're now
giving Gabe Rivera two plugs in this episode.
But it's a good place to read news.
I know. I that's my first page I start on every single.
But you know what? I mean, people know tech meme, but I love
Mimi Random. Yeah,
and I don't think anybody knows it. And every time I'm like, Gabe, it's like elections again. You got to do something more with this. It's awesome. It wraps up all, and you get news content from mainstream. I get news content from far right sites that freak me out, but I at least feel like I understand what's going on. Like you're like, oh my God, you really believe that? Yeah. Okay, but at least, and then you get them on the other sides too. So it's interesting. Anyway, they're testing an Explore tab, according to Mashable, where on mobile that would be in place of the Moments tab, where they're going to try to let you explore different things that are happening. I don't have it.
I thought I already got that. That sounds familiar.
I don't think I have it. Is that
highlights? This is like the third thing. I get highlights, but I think that's the Android.
There's so many different things they have these days. There's lots of things.
Oh, no, I still
have
Moments.
I was very impressed, and I tweeted this yesterday. I was surprised the amount of attention it got relatively for me. But, like, we were sitting there at home, as we do, and my son said something like, oh, yeah, I saw this thing on Twitter Moments. Like, and I'm like, you saw something on Twitter Moments? Like, you're using Twitter Moments? And he said, yeah. And he's like, I use it all the time, and, yeah, my friends look at it. So I was like, oh. So maybe they've been successful in getting that new stuff pushed out there.
Well, this is a good time to be doing that, right?
Well, so Highlights is Android only, right? You don't get that on the website or on the iOS.
It's Highlights. I don't have Highlights.
I used to subscribe to Highlights for children when I was young.
Wait,
Amazon.
You know what I'm talking about? Have you guys, have seen this, right?
No, I don't remember it. It's very bright and shiny.
Yes, hang on.
You really need to clean your screen.
Yeah, that's gross. I don't even like looking at it.
That you're in a test. You're in a test pattern. There's something.
No, says this has been here for a while, but I think they shipped it on Android first.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, I don't see it on iOS.
Because it's.
Okay, so I'm going to grant you. I have to revise a little bit my.
So it's kind of like moments, but it's things.
Oh,
that,
yeah, yeah.
That people
they rolled it out.
There's some valuable things. I think Twitter is, you know, I mean, especially in terms of news, and I guess in football, they're making some progress here. I don't. Maybe they should just give up trying to sell. Do you think they're going to sell?
I think the problem is their value. Sure. They got a value that was we are also like Facebook, and they're not.
Yeah,
and so
something else.
You know, and they're not going to be. They could be a good little business, and you know, there's a lot of great stuff to love about them. But if you've got investors that just expect a lot more, that's tough.
Here it is. Highlights.
They've gone public.
The most interesting content from Twitter, tailored for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Popular conversations, tweets. Uh-huh. How do I get highlights?
So only on Android.
Only on Android. Yeah.
I'm not hallucinating. Okay.
Tap the navigation menu icon, the hamburger, or your profile icon. Tap notifications, mobile notifications, and there's a checkbox next to highlights.
Oh, there's a little lightning
it's
symbol.
It's a new Rogue One poster. That's what's going on.
Ooh.
But highlights is moments. It's highlights is based on who you follow.
This looks good. I like it.
Moments is global.
Yeah. You know what?
No. Well, reuse it for a bit. You won't. Boring. It's stuff you already know. Think about highlights. You already know it.
Well, no, but if Leo is not going to Twitter much, then he will actually like it. It's another one of these things that makes sense if you don't use Twitter much.
Right. It'll be like almost here's what you've missed.
Yes, it's like here's what you've missed, but with a slightly different, with a more moments like presentation.
Yeah.
They also let you create moments now. You saw that, right? That was last week, the week before.
I can make my own moments?
Yes. If you go to the website, go to moments on the website.
Yeah.
There's on the right hand side, there's a make moment button and you can add tweets to it.
I was going to do that and then I couldn't get it going because they didn't make it. Is that working now?
Yeah. I made one.
Yeah, I see it. You can create moments.
Now, but now I don't care.
So is this like track?
I don't care.
Have they finally brought back track 8 years after they
No, it's not track. Basically, it's curated. So it's basically a collection post. You go there and then you put a bunch of tweets into it to create a collation of tweets that makes sense to you. And then you publish the moment and then it says, oh, can you give us some phone-shaped crops of the photos in it. I'm like, really?
And then sees it?
And then it tells you to share it with a link. You've got a permalink to it.
Okay.
And it shows up in the moments page for people who follow you.
Maybe I should make some twit moments.
I was very excited about it when it first came out.
You could do a per show moment. Yeah, when you publish the show, you can make
a
moment for the
idea.
Show.
Yeah.
With the links and the tweets to things that were in it. Yeah. So it's a way to... So it starts to make more sense because the moments only being made by them was a bit weird.
Yeah.
And this was a tool I think they gave to some content partners. So, yeah, you get ones that are credited to NFL and things.
Yeah.
And so now you can make your own as well. So it's, you know, as I say, they're clearly rethinking themselves as a media company and not as a social company. They've been saying that for a while, but they're actually starting to deploy things that add to that. And that's the piece that would make sense for Google, particularly in combination with YouTube. Because YouTube, the live YouTube experience is there, but there's the commentary stuff is not strong. Whereas Twitter's live commentary on real things is very strong, and it's a piece that basically Google had bits of this in Reader. The real debacle of Reader was them saying, oh, there weren't enough users for this, but they didn't realize that the users they had were all the people who published news. It was everyone Jeff knows was using Reader because the journalists were using it to gather stories and share stuff back and forth. And that's the piece that Twitter rebuilt with some very good work by the media team there, making sure that everyone who was in media was on Twitter, was verified, was part of the conversation, and was having their conversation inside Twitter. And also make it easy to break Twitter into news stories, things like that. And that's what we're seeing in the election. You know, Twitter is in the news cycle every day and is part of it. And that's a piece that Google has sort of, they had bits of it with Reader, they had bits of it with News, but they never quite got the two together into a thing that you could share well. So if I was, it would make sense to put them in Google or maybe Alphabet, but Google because then they could be wired up with YouTube. But the question would be the turf war of who gets to own it and run it and make it work inside Google.
All the issues that Twitter's had since its IPO, Snapchat is now about to move into the same position. It would be probably the largest social media IPO since Twitter. They've picked Morgan Stanley Goldman to lead the IPO. That means they're moving ahead. As soon as March, according to some sources, again, these
the
are
the same woman from Bloomberg.
Yeah.
She's back.
I can't get away from her. this is Bloomberg now. Stalking. I'm on the Bloomberg site. I'm getting the same video feed. Snapchat has changed its name to Snap, which is snappier.
If you go to Twitter logged out, it's even bigger. I just went to an incognito window, and it's like, it's two-thirds.
This is the problem I have with Twitter. You can try to change the subject, but Twitter still sneaks into the subject. You techno-literate digerati, give Twitter way more importance than it ought to have in the general culture. And also, I think you can make the argument it's had a kind of a baleful influence on political dialogue of late. Amazon has launched a service for you Echo owners, a streaming service called Music Unlimited that has, they're not saying, but it sounds like close to the same number of tracks as all the others, Spotify and Google Music and Apple Music. But it's got a better price. If you're a Prime member, $8 a month, $79 a year, $10, the usual $10 for non-Prime members. And if you don't mind having it on only one Echo, $4 a month. So if you have an Echo in the house that's connected to your stereo and all you care about is having a great, unlimited selection of music on your stereo, that's a very good deal, $4 a month. Amazon is not resting on its Echo. They are beefing it up. Washington Post tracked Facebook's trending topics and uncovered over the last 3 weeks 5 fake stories.
Just kill trending. It is the worst Facebook feature.
And 3 undeniably or profoundly inaccurate ones. Okay, who cares? Oh, here's a big one for people who are interested in the Pixel. Remember Ron Amadio's story, under no circumstance, Ars Technica, under no circumstances should you buy your Pixel from Verizon. The update is Verizon says Pixels will get updates even if you bought them from Verizon at the same time as Google's. They won't stand in the way, and Google confirms, yes.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it.
Really? So yeah. You would say, don't get your Pixel from Verizon as well.
No.
Jeff, you left Verizon, or no? You're still on Verizon?
No.
You're long gone. Okay.
Yeah, I'm on Verizon Fios, to be clear. I love that, but Verizon Mobile.
Still probably should get your Pixel unlocked, right? Not a Verizon.
But do you still think I should just return it?
Like what advantage would you have in buying it through Verizon?
Right. Right. Good point.
What does it? Do they have to have a different version, or are they all multi-band now?
I think they're all multi-band. I don't know. Okay. But the real concern was initially that Verizon would be a gatekeeper to Google's updates, which, of course, you don't want. If you buy a Pixel, the same reason as you bought the Nexus, because you want the updates promptly. Here's a good one from the New York Times. Facebook's voter registration reminder that displayed it for a mere 4 days in September contributed to substantial increases in online voter registration across the country. At least 9 secretaries
of
state.
Look at the graphic. It's great.
Have said that 4 days made a huge difference.
Of course, some will argue and complain, they're having an impact on the election. We have how transparent. But just simply saying registering more people is a good thing.
This is the Facebook bump in Maryland, Minnesota, Oregon, Pennsylvania. It's across the board. Big difference overall. And, of course, as the Times points out, it's notable not just for boosting voter registration, but maybe for the kinds of voters. Facebook did not provide demographic breakdowns, but it is more popular among females than males, younger more than older. Is that still true? I feel like it's all old folks on Facebook. If Snapchat did it, it would be for sure younger and skewed probably towards females.
Yeah, I got to say, as you know, I spent the last few weekends in Pennsylvania registering people. And A, it's terribly inefficient. You know, one day I spent 3 hours there and got three registrants.
Wow.
But yet, it's so gratifying when it almost always was a Latino who would say, "Oh, God, I can register. I've been wanting to register. Oh, thank you. I can register." And, wow. And the excitement they had, it was great.
That's great.
I had two people who moved from Puerto Rico or citizens who could vote, and it mattered. And they were terribly excited.
They could vote in Puerto Rico, too, I hate to tell you.
But not in a way that's going to have the impact of all Pennsylvania.
No, and that's why I'm moving to Pennsylvania, because it doesn't matter who I vote for in California.
No.
But I'm still voting. Dang it.
That's right. Rohrabacher is going to defend my right to have Donald Trump be my candidate forever.
What state are you in? You're in Pennsylvania?
Who, me?
No, I'm in Orange County.
Oh, that's
right. He's in Orange County.
You're Dana Rohrabacher. Of course, I should have known. Yeah. Is he up for election?
Rohrabacher?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. But yeah. He's going to win because it's Orange County.
The state of the opposition in Orange County is such that the opposing candidate did not even have a statement in the official booklet.
You don't need
didn't even bother to file it.
Just, don't even worry about it.
whatever. You know,
that's going to change, young man. I just saw an article that says Santa Ana, was it Santa Ana, is all Latino in the city council? And
oh, it'll change.
A Latino coastal majority?
We're like this little coastal enclave that just hangs in there, the Republican.
I know. I was in Irvine. I couldn't believe it. It's like, wow.
Yeah, if you come to Irvine, you've got to tell me. You've got to come out to Newport Beach.
I actually was in Newport Beach. I was staying at the whatever they call that ridiculous tower in the sky there.
Leo, come by.
What is the name of that thing? It was a couple of months ago. It was fun. I didn't realize you were there. I also, you know who else is there? Steve Gibson's in Irvine. Didn't see him either.
Yeah.
Well,
he never called me anyway.
In Connecticut, in 3 days in Connecticut, because of this Facebook campaign, 14,883 people registered, a 12-fold increase over the week before.
And how many people, how many
talking
votes
about measuring
Florida? 527, I think, right? That made a difference.
It's amazing. 12,000. Pandora is also doing its music service, Pandora Plus. And they've unveiled a new company logo. Wow. I hope they didn't spend too much money on that.
Did somebody get their fingerprints on it near the logo? Or?
Kind of looks like finger painting.
Yeah, potato cutouts.
Oh, that's it. They did it with a potato. You're right. It's potato prints. No, that's not it. I'm sorry. That fooled me. TechCrunch, stop that. Along with the new company logo, TechCrunch did its own potato illustration, but that's actually the new logo. The new service will be $4.99 a month, but it's... Wait, no. Pandora Plus... Oh, I'm confused. Pandora One has always been around. I don't know.
I don't get Pandora. Can you just play whatever you want, or is it still that...
No, you can't, and you have limited skips and all that. Yeah,
yeah. Why wouldn't you just use Spotify?
Everybody has a radio style product now.
Yeah. I know, but with Pandora, I kind of gave up because I'd want to hear a particular song, but they weren't allowed to play you that song.
With Pandora Plus, there's no ads. You can skip more songs, more replays, and they have offline listening, so it's a little bit.
Yeah, I'll just use Spotify. That's for me.
I actually.
Although the Echo thing is good because you can, you act it for a song, and if you're a Prime member, you get the song sometimes, but then sometimes it doesn't have it. But
so Spotify for Amazon. I'm going to use the Amazon instead.
Yeah, well, you can hook Spotify up into the Echo, but the thing is, then you have to go.
You have to say on Spotify.
Alexa,
right.
Turn on my lights.
Right.
I wonder if my lights went on. Sorry, no.
Don't say the A word.
Alexa.
Echo.
Spotify. Alexa.
Stop it. Stop it.
Alexa.
Stop it. Shh. You know what I did learn in that announcement is that the number one command on Echo, do you know what it is? Echo, listen to music. Not any kind of music, just listen to music. And I tried it and actually does a pretty good job. But if you get the new paid thing, it'll even do a broader variety of stuff.
What's our betting? What's our betting on Google Home? Is it going to be good or is it going to be another disaster?
Oh, I'm glad you asked.
What do you think, Danny Sullivan?
I think it might do all right. I think being priced less than Amazon, that's very interesting. I think it's going to be really successful if you have some music bundled into it, though. I think that's one of the key things with Echo is because the Echo, you were a Prime member, I think, originally when you got it, and then it would play your music, and then it's really convenient for that. It'll be interesting to see how well they do with some of the other skills, though, because it's just amazing the stuff you can do with Alexa to get to your flash briefings and things like that. But I think people are interested in doing it. And
incidentally,
yeah, I think it'll do all right.
If you are an Echo user and you like the flash briefing, go into the app and search for Twit, because we are in the flash briefing now. Monday through Friday, we have headlines from Tech News Today with Megan and Jason. And then we'll have clips from Twit and the new screensavers typically on Saturday and Sunday. So there's new content every day. Add us to your flash briefing.
They've done a lot where when I was at the thing, I got in trouble kind of because they were doing the Google Home demo. And so they're like, look, and it can do this and it can do that and it can do this. And they're like, they're doing like, now let's play Jeopardy. And it's like, hello, time to play Jeopardy. So you can tell that they've done a lot of stuff to build in to try to get you excited about it.
I love
it.
And
then I finally said, can I just ask it a few of these questions?
No.
They're like, no, well, I don't know if I can answer that. I'm like, well, that is sort of what I'm trying to find out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it did. I gave it three questions that I had run against the Amazon Echo that the Echo could not answer. And Google Home got two of those three correct.
So it's more like the Google Assistant. Well, it is the Google Assistant. So it's anything.
It's Google Assistant built in. And then Google Assistant is really whatever direct answer you get at the top of your Google search results. So
Jeff, I'm sure you ordered the Home, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mine supposedly comes, let me see, order details. I think November 8th through 10th. So soon. A couple of weeks, 3 weeks. Is yours sooner?
How do I find it?
I think if you ordered right away, it was as soon as November 4th, I think. Because I think Anthony Nielsen ordered it, and we're going to have it for that new screensavers November 5th. So
I was a bit delayed because I kept trying to figure out how to order the other colors until I realized that there are no other colors.
That got me about 30 seconds.
There's colored bases, right? You know, and then they're not even available.
November 8th, Leo.
You're also November 8th. All right. Okay.
I think that's the soonest. And then the phone I'm getting
soon, October 20th. You should.
October 26th.
6th. Okay.
So do I keep it or not?
You keep asking me that.
I know I do. You're my.
I don't know.
Sensei. It's
supposed to be a much better camera.
The pictures look great.
I'm really curious what the. I still don't know. Maybe you do, Danny. The difference between OK Google and the. Sorry, everybody. And then the Google Assistant.
OK Google. Here's how it works. Alexa. Siri. So the assistant will still respond to OK Google. The assistant will still respond to the hot word like you used to having the hot word before. Right. So that won't
change. Can I customize it? I really miss that.
I'm trying to remember when I did.
The Moto X was the last thing that would let you do that.
I think there was an option to change the wake word, but that might have been. No, I can't recall.
Okay.
I can't recall. I suspect probably not, but. But the speaking to it part hasn't changed. It's just that the assistant part is built in. Like, you know, right now if you have a phone and you do the Google and you tell it what you want to do as a voice search, it will come back with Google search results. So that's how to think of the difference between what Google Assistant does versus what you get now. With what you get now, you say to Google, hey, Google, what movies are playing near me? And it comes back and it says – here's some listings.
Yeah.
With the assistant, you say, hey, Google, but, you know, the other way, what movies are playing near me? And it comes back and says, I can show you the movies here. Would you like to know showtime? And it gives you basically little buttons.
And then you could buy tickets.
The ticket stuff isn't quite there yet. Okay. I think it depends on what application you have. Like, it'll launch Fandango, but it's a little more interactive.
But eventually that's the plan. Is that will actually assist you. So it will take a step beyond search to actually assist you in doing actions.
Although I was having fun, and I don't know if I can show you, especially because my wife and I tend to get very...
intimate?
No, she just... we curse at each other in our text messages.
Oh, nice. Oh, you've been married longer than I have, I guess. Yeah.
As a joke. But she said to me something like, I was saying, look, I need to test this Google Assistant. Can you run it? So we were doing this thing going back and forth. I'm trying to find out.
Jeff and I had a great conversation on Allo while I was at the airport in Paris. And
yeah.
It was fun. I liked all the things I could do with the with Allo. I just wish Google, I still don't understand, and I think this is going to be the case still with the Pixel, why it's not their default text messaging app.
Oh, Allo?
Yes.
I don't know. I hate Allo, and I wish
if you're going to go all in on your messaging platform, don't have three messaging apps. Plus whatever the carrier and the manufacturer
put on there.
I'll
use Allo just for assistance.
I can't even with them the messaging. I can't even. Like, I don't even. I can use Allo on one phone, but not, no.
Oh, you're right. No. It's tied to your number.
Tied to your number, and I have a Google Voice number. So then I'm tying it to one phone, but I can't use it on the other phone. Meanwhile, I have a Google Voice number that was supposed to use Google Hangouts. So now I can't use Google Hangouts because they, you know, or they're kind of going away from that. It's like, why couldn't you just give us one good app? And then I don't know what Duo is supposed to be versus Allo.
I agree. I can't even.
So, while you were away, Leo, we did talk about this. There was an article in Ars Technica saying Allo makes sense if you think about India, which I just stuck in the...
Yeah. So does WhatsApp.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, good. If I were
but
in
I'm
India,
not in India,
that would be helpful
me. But that explains why they're not making it the default app yet, because it's not ready for it. But they're focused
can
on...
Can I make it an option to be the default app?
No, because that... Yeah,
on the Nexus.
No, you can't. They haven't decided to do it. But at the moment, like half my apps on Android want to take over SMS already. You know, Facebook wants it and Hangouts wants it and Messenger.
Well, they better hurry up because I'm using Facebook as my messenger now.
Yep. I'm sure they'll get to it at some point.
I'm just going to leave Google Voice.
I'm as frustrated as you are. It's the reason I hate WhatsApp as well.
I understand that in much of the rest of the world, the rapacious cell carriers and mobile companies charge you so much for SMS that people won't use SMS. They use a data-only system like WhatsApp. That's explaining the popularity of WhatsApp worldwide. And Allo would be a plug-in replacement for that. But that does not mean it shouldn't also be like Apple's Messages or even its own Hangouts and be an SMS plus messaging app. Apple does it quite well where it will use SMS or it will use data depending on which is available. And if you, I presume in India, you could tell Apple, just use data. I don't ever want to use SMS.
Right.
Unless you have to, because sometimes if somebody's not on an iPhone, you have
to. Which is also the great thing about Hangout is it works just like the Apple Messages where you can send the stuff via
email. And it's cross-platform.
And they're beautiful on cross-platform. So why they made Allo non-cross-platform, because it's tied to your freaking phone number.
Well, it's cross-platform in the sense that you can talk to somebody on an iPhone from an Android phone and vice versa.
Yeah, but heaven forbid you want to talk to somebody from your iPhone and your iPad, because only one of them gets to run Allo at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not multi-platform, which is very odd,
and very not googly. Yeah.
And that's the advantage of having an email account way to do it, yeah.
But the advantage, I guess, to them is if you're just doing your phone number, they've hooked you up without you having to do passwords or something like that.
Without having to create a Google account is part of the point. You can use it on the phone without a Google account, which means they can deploy it on Androids that aren't Googlified. So that's the actual – if you want the actual internal turf war, that's what it is.
Do you think it's important or a significant number that Google YouTube had for the second presidential debate, 124 million views? That seems to me a real harbinger of a change in how people consume content. That's almost shocking, especially since the debate was on every network. You couldn't, any TV you turned on would have the debate. And yet, 124 million people chose their.
So how are they counting
the viewing on television was down? Like, fewer people watched the debate on television, so it's interesting if more people were actually watching the second debate on Twitter.
The peak concurrent viewing was 1.5 million, which isn't huge. So that tells me, to answer your question, Kevin,
it's click views,
it's people clicking and clicking away.
This is YouTube this is not YouTube Live, is it? This is YouTube, all stuff around it. The distinction's kind of...
Yeah, important. Well, since it took place Sunday.
Yeah.
So this is people not just from the U.S., probably everybody in the U.S. watched live on television, but all over the world, the country with the highest number was the U.S., but then Canada, Mexico, Australia, the U.K., and Vietnam.
Did Twitter release figures on that? I remember there being like 3 million or something from them, but...
Yeah, this is rapidly happening, this consuming content over the internet as opposed to broadcast. Very interesting. Will Sheryl Sandberg be the next Secretary of the Treasury? She says no. She's going to stay at Facebook. I like the idea that she could Secretary of Treasury or Commerce. I don't know who thought that up.
Remember when we thought it was going to be Schmidt would suddenly be in the cabinet?
Wouldn't that be a mistake? I like Eric, but...
Yeah.
Elon says he's going to announce something next week to blow your mind.
That they're actually going to ship those cars
sometime? No, that he found the wormhole into the people who were running this all.
He's paying... We mentioned this on Sunday on Twit. According to rumor, he and some others who believe we don't live in the real world but live in a simulation are paying programmers or experts or whatever, whoever you'd pay, to break through. He's trying to develop the red pill. Physicists?
Yes.
Why not? How would you, Kevin Marks, if Elon came to you with a blank check, how would you break through the simulation to the real world?
Well, the point is you look for low-resolution stuff.
Glitches, in the words of the Matrix.
Glitches in the Matrix. You look for, is there an alignment that implies there are pixels involved? Is there the alignment of that kind of, or voxels involved? Is there some quantization thing that is a science simulation?
You got to figure that some of this simulation...
It's all put into my brain. There's no pixels in my brain. No low resolution in my brain.
No, but it's. I don't think it's actual voxels.
No, mine's getting more low resolution.
Actually, so, there is, because you don't. You think you're seeing clearly.
Yeah.
When in fact you are not. Your brain is piecing together a view.
I use glasses. Now I can see clearly.
No, you don't see what's out here. You just think you do.
That's because they only. Yeah. Right here,
because you got a fovea and it's circading and it's picking. It's maybe
a
model.
The circading, which is the jiggling of your eyes all the time, is building up an image. So in fact, it's a raster image.
The argument is that, and the crazy version of this argument get very crazy. But it's like, if you look at quantum mechanics, if you look at the way physical laws work. They don't tend to have higher order terms. The observer problem in quantum mechanics is that's kind of a giveaway. There are any random things we look at. So you argue things on those bases, but trying to break out of the simulation is kind of silly. Yes.
I don't know. I hope he does. Although, imagine.
If I was in a simulation, I wouldn't be allowing some billionaires to fund the ability to break through the simulation. So we're not in a simulation, stupid.
Unless. I think that'd be kind of interesting, wouldn't it?
And then you get an eschaton scenario, don't you?
Right. Yeah.
Or I'd say I must be in a simulation, because only in a simulation do we have people with more money than God throwing out money to try to find out whether or not there's actually a God controlling us in a simulation or not. And also, why is your Model X so expensive?
Oh, I like it. I have
a Model X.
Yeah.
Is it really because I need to get a new car? And I was like, laid them all out. And I'm like,
it's very expensive.
Is like 5 times more.
Yeah.
Why do I want that? Like, I could.
You could drive a Chevy.
And the amount of gas I would use.
No. That's not about that. It's the pleasure, the sheer joy of driving an electric, all electric vehicle, and knowing that the solar panels, which I also bought from Elon, on my roof, are charging the battery, which I also bought from Elon in my garage, which is charging the car, which I bought from Elon. And it's a virtuous circle.
Solar panels on my roof that I don't want to charge Elon's car, because it's better for me to sell the electricity in the daytime back to SoCal and then charge my car at night rather than put it in the battery. It's just all economics, and I'll just buy the gas.
It's not economics. It's the sheer joy of driving a car that has so little footprint. And it feels just like a gas car with the acceleration and everything. It's fun to drive.
It has so little footprint. It's like a car, and it's using electricity. And I'm
which I make,
car.
which I take on
I
loan from God.
I'm just putting it out there for other people who need it.
Well, you can buy a Chevy Bolt. Get a Bolt.
So expensive.
If you don't care, that's get a Chevy Bolt.
By getting a Bolt.
Good.
But that's not expensive.
Yeah, and it's not as much fun.
I just want to get one place or the other.
Oh, well, then fine.
I mean, I do want the wings, doors.
You should get
of
a bicycle. Get a
I
bicycle.
Want doors of a billionaire. A bicycle. And you know why they're called doors of a billionaire?
Yes.
Elon's making a billion off those doors.
I want doors that go like this. They don't just go like this, they go like this.
Is there anything you don't like about it?
It's not a luxury vehicle. I mean, for the price you're paying, it should be very a little bit more luxurious.
Really?
Well, none of their vehicles really are luxury vehicles. They're just luxury price. You
why
know.
Are you putting me?
But I love it. I pinch myself every time I get into it and feel good about it. I just really love the idea of driving an electric vehicle and that it's fun to drive. And we just got version 8 of the software, so I'm going to do the review on the new screensavers on Saturday. Because we've held off on the review until the new software came out with 200 improvements to autopilot and all of that. Last story before
Does it automatically stop your car, by the way?
Does what?
It's a do the automatic if somebody stops in front of you, it'll automatically stop.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, it's fascinating for me because I haven't bought a car for like 8 years, right?
Next time you're out here, come up, Danny, and I will let you take the Tesla for a day. Ooh. And you could go anywhere you want, drive it around. Seriously.
But what's fascinating
just not
is
to
I'm looking,
wine country,
I'm looking
that's
at
all.
These cars right now, and I'm like, wait, you don't have AutoPlay? You still have like an old navigation system? You don't automatically stop my car? And I'm like, why are you guys not this advanced? Why,
yeah, well, because you didn't pay $130,000 for it.
Well, no, but some of them are. Like, some of them
the
are.
The reason I spent that much money is because I am an altruist. I want to fund the next generation so that you, Danny, can have a Model 3.
Well,
that's what Jason Calacanis told me.
I bought my solar panels not just because I thought they'd make money, but because I actually wanted to be more environmentally sound.
And that's what we said. Even if we just break even, this is great, and we do save a lot of money on our solar power. We save hundreds of dollars a month because we got solar panels.
Oh my God, I got my first bill and it was like negative.
Yeah, it's a nice
feeling.
Last story.
Leo, I gotta go. I gotta go away. I'm really sorry. I have to leave. I'm like, card
stop. Your fault. I was trying to wrap this show up hours ago. All right. Okay. Sorry. See ya. Goodbye, Danny.
Are you about to wrap up? I'll hang in there.
SearchEngineLand.com, MarketingEngineLand.com.
I'm sorry I have to go.
You know what? Give us one little tip or trick or something we should know about that if we had just been reading Search Engine Land assiduously, we would already know.
I went through. It's been fairly quiet. And you've got that RGB hex thing already on the list. So I'll leave that RGB hex thing to you.
Okay.
So I will say Snapchat's had some redesigns. We've got some articles up on that at Marketing Land. And but most of the news this month has really been like hey, Google's not penalizing you anymore, and that's not as boring as nobody cares about that. So
have a great afternoon, my friend.
All right, you guys. Sorry, I got to go.
No
have
problem.
Have a great time.
Danny right, Sullivan, the greatest. Bye. SearchEngineLand.com.
Danny.
MarketingEngineLand.com.
See you.
OrangeCountyLand.com.
But it's nice in the summer.
It's beautiful.
I mean,
in the winter, too. NewportBeachLand.com. Our show today brought to you by Danny's Mattress. The Casper. Oh, my mattress, too. I love our Casper mattress. They've reinvented the mattress business. You know, there are a lot of copycats now. Have you noticed that? Yeah, but, you know, you should go with Casper. They were the ones who have revolutionized the whole thing by eliminating the middleman. No more resellers. No more showrooms. You're buying directly from the factory, U.S.-made, obsessively engineered premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They're combining two technologies, springy latex foam, supportive memory foam, to create an amazing, award-winning, in fact, sleep surface. Just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's cool. It breathes. It's environmentally friendly. It's just lovely. 2016 Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award winner. Long-lasting, too, by the way. Now, you might say, but Leo, I want to try before I buy. Yeah, you can. By getting it now in your home, without any risk, you have 100 nights. And if at any time in the 100-day period you say, eh, call them. They'll send a courier. They'll take it back, refund you every penny, and it'll have cost you absolutely nothing. The nice thing is it comes in this great little compact box. So it's very – I sent one to my son in college because he could easily heft it up the three flights of this dorm. He didn't have to sleep on that ratty dorm mattress. Instead, he's had a great mattress for his college experience. And it's affordable, $500 for that twin I sent to Henry. And I'm going to save you even more, an additional $50 towards a mattress. But just because you're listening, if you go, but you got to go to Casper.com/twig and use the offer code TWIG, $50 off. Please do that so that they know that you you heard it on This Week in Google. Casper.com/twig, offer code TWIG to get $50 off. Some terms and conditions apply. Casper mattress. I love my Casper, and you will too. But you can try it risk-free, so why not? Jeff Jarvis, do you want to do a number, or what do you want to do these days? Uh-oh, he's silenced. You're silenced. You're silenced.
Sorry, I was turning up the TV, so I turned that down.
Okay.
So, yes, I wanted a number, a very important one. Our friend of everyone on the internet, friend of openness and great things about the net, John Perry Barlow, has been sick with unknown conditions and a heart attack and so on, and his family just put up a plea for money to help him pay for his very expensive, very difficult care. He's as funny as ever. If you go to his Facebook page, you'll see him doing a New Year's Eve noisemaker. He's got the same spirit as ever, but he needs a lot of equipment and ongoing care, and the guy is courageous in the face of all this, but he's the best humor you can imagine online on his Facebook feed, but he's somebody who's really important to the net, who's given greatly to the net, so as soon as we're off, I'll be giving some money to him.
Well, and I'll add to that because they're doing a concert down the road, yes, a piece. And Lisa and I are going, and we bought the top level because I wanted to contribute as well to John, because I love John dearly. He's been on the show several times, and we owe him a lot. He was the founder of the EFF and just a really important person in the development of technology and of the internet. And the concert, if you can go.
Yeah, so who's playing at the concert?
Well, Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead is kind of putting it together, and so that'll give you some idea. You know, of course you should just go anyway, but I'll be there. Lisa will be there. Let me see if I can find the Facebook.
Yeah, Boing Boing was down. They had it.
Yeah. I will look it up at this. It's on this. If you go to Sweetwater.com, that's their site, and you can buy tickets if it's not sold out. The event is called Everyday Miracle. Jerry Harrison of the Talking Heads, he was the keyboardist. Lucas Nelson, members of String Cheese Incident. Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Sean Lennon, Les Claypool. That's who's on the bill right now, but you got to believe there'll be a lot of other people at this event. Now, it's in Marin, so you have to be in the Bay Area. But definitely, I bought tickets immediately because I really care about John Perry Barlow, and we really want him to get well soon, and certainly want to help him with his medical expenses. There'll also be a live and silent auction, and all the proceeds go directly to his care and recovery. So there you go. There you go, John Perry Barlow. How about you, Kevin Marks? You got something for us?
Well, I've got my usual thing, which is IndieWeb.com. Org. It's not in very bright sunlight. Anyway,
I like it. I'm jealous.
So there are two indie web camps coming up in November. November, the weekend of the 4th to the 6th in Berlin and Los Angeles, depending on which side of the planet you're on. So those are the next two. And we've got our regular Wednesday meetings, not this week, but next week in various places and the week after in San Francisco.
Nice.
So go to those. The other thing I wanted to mention was Ada Lovelace Day. That was yesterday. This is the annual Recognizing Women in Tech Day, organized by Sue Charman. And they have a live event in London, but they also encourage people to write about women in tech and to show them as role models, so that girls will find women role models to look up to and so on. So that's a great organization, a great site, and there's a lot going on there, and they've got a podcast as well now, and a series of other things they put out, but yesterday was the big day.
Does anybody know what the RGB to hex calculator that Danny was talking about, what that is?
I play with it. If you just type in RGB to hex, you can put in any color and get the numbers.
Oh, Google does this for you.
Yeah, it's under my numbers.
So if you search for RGB to hex on Google.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Isn't it?
I was searching for, look at that. Google is so funny. This is something we used to do all the time, right, on the web. Yeah. I don't know if you still do it, but that's funny.
Yeah, but this is, there's a color picker that looks exactly like that in the browser, but it's kind of funny to.
In the search. Somebody's 20% project. I love it. Search for RGB to hex on Google, and you never will have to guess what the hexadecimal representation is of a particular color. Remember the days when you had to use color safe colors?
Oh, yes. Yeah. There are only 256 colors, and they're all really bright.
They're all hideous.
Yes.
And if you didn't, then you couldn't guarantee the browser would do the right thing.
You might get dithering, yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, we don't want dithering. How funny.
But there were only every... You can literally look at it in there. They were only every 3 hex. So it was 0, 3, 6, 9, A, F.
Sure, that makes sense.
And then all the permutations of that, there's the colors you got, which meant there weren't any very subtle ones in that. They were all variously quite sort of glowing.
Yeah. And if you're not already a Google Fi subscriber, you really ought to be. And they've now added, just a couple of days ago, group plans. So now, if you are a Google Fi person like I am, Jeff is, you can add your family members. They have to have Nexus or Pixel phones to do it, but I think that's fantastic.
$15 a month?
Yeah, $15 a month, and I guess they're in, so instead of your $20 a month, and they're in on your data plan at $10 a gigabyte.
So they share the data? If they don't have separate data,
that's
they share the
question.
Same data?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's a big difference.
Not really, because you're paying for it either way, right? So I just think of it as a $15 instead of $20 entrance fee.
If five people use 5 gigs each, it's $10 a gig.
Yeah.
So five people use half a gig each, that'd be $25.
Yeah, but aren't you paying for it anyway? I mean,
no. What I'm saying is that if you can't add it up, in words, if five people use half
a gig. I see. You don't get the right. Fractional usage.
That would be 2.5.
Yeah, no. I think each person has their own data counter.
Okay. No, it's $10.
So really, essentially, but essentially,
still
the big change
price.
Is you get a $5 discount on additional people on your account.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's fine.
It's great. And up to 6, I think, something like that. I'm loving Fi, and I should report that I took both the Fi phone and a T-Mobile phone to the 10 countries that I visited on vacation, and what I found was that in many cases, T-Mobile was a little faster than Fi.
Hmm.
And T-Mobile was cheaper because T-Mobile... Now, maybe that was the phone. I don't know. I was using the iPhone 7 compared to the Nexus 6P. You know, presumably, if I'm on T-Mobile, the Nexus phone is also using T-Mobile.
But maybe Fi is paying them something for it.
Maybe. I don't know. Because
they're an MVNO. Yeah.
You still pay the price. Whereas with T-Mobile, it's just part of your account. It's unlimited.
Yeah, but T-Mobile, you get free data throttled to 120 kilobit.
That's the point, is that it wasn't throttled. It didn't. They had said over the summer they weren't going to throttle, and then they've continued that. I suspect they're going to continue that forever. So it was LTE very often, and that was nice. That was nice. I was very happy with that. So I did a mix of them. Now I'll let you know when I get my bill. I might regret that. I don't know. But it really is. It's really great to be able to go now travel and not have to worry about crazy data roaming costs.
Yeah.
So if you travel, either a Fi phone or a... They were close enough that I think you'd be happy with either. Either a Fi phone or a T-Mobile phone. And you don't have to make any special travel arrangements. maybe that makes sense. Because they're an MVNO, maybe they get a lower priority than T-Mobile Direct. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was close, but I noticed in most cases I preferred the iPhone over the Nexus 6P.
But it may be that there may be an extra handshake as you roam or something that it's got to look up.
Right.
So the other one that was in the rundown was the patent trolling thing, which I think is fascinating.
Oh, I was going to talk about that, and I just, because Danny wanted to get out of here, I didn't. Let's mention it. It's kind of complicated to explain.
Sure.
Is it that, or is it the one about these weird cases, the suspicious court cases? Which one is it that you want to talk about?
I would talk about the patent one, but the court cases one is interesting too.
They're related. They're related. Well, kind of.
The other one's more of a Section 230 thing.
Okay, so do that one.
So just do this one first.
Yep.
So the suspicious court cases, they want people, they want stuff taken down.
So let's say you're not living in Europe with the right to be forgotten, but you want Google to take down that article. The problem is Google or Yelp or a lot of places won't do it just because you ask them. On the other hand, if you get a court order saying it's defamatory, well, then they're going to take it down. How do you get the court order? You do a fake lawsuit with fake defendants. You're both sides.
The same name as the person.
Yeah, the same name. That's critical so that the order looks the same. You play both sides. As the defendant, you say, oh, you're right. It was defamatory. The court goes, oh, well, case closed. It's defamatory. Issues an order, which you send to Google saying, see, it's defamatory. And Danny Sullivan says so. And they pull it down. And Washington Post has found at least 25 court cases. And I bet there's many, many more. The suspicion is that it's reputation defense companies that are doing these. You pay them a lot of money.
Right.
And what they're doing is basically they're going into a jurisdiction, making up a plaintiff, making up a defendant.
Brazen.
With the same, it's very brazen, with the same name or somehow that could easily be confused for the same person that you would like to sue for real, have them plea. So, for instance, Matthew Chan, a Georgia resident, posts a negative review of a Georgia dentist on Yelp and a few other sites. Several months after he put up his post, Yelp emails him saying it's about to take his comment down because it got a court order that says the comment's defamatory. But wait, says Chan, no one sued me. How'd you get a court order? Well, the suit was against a Matthew Chan of Baltimore, who doesn't, by the way, exist. It was filed in court by somebody apparently working on behalf of the dentist. And, well, actually, the dentist says, well, we didn't do it, but we did hire a reputation management company. And so the reputation management company goes to another jurisdiction, in this case, Baltimore, files suit, and then responds to the suit saying, yes, Your Honor, you're absolutely right. It was defamatory. I'm sorry. And then they have a court order that says Matthew Chan agreed. It's not illegal. Is it?
Well, no, it's impersonation of a sort. Yeah, you're impersonating. Even though the name is the same, you're impersonating someone.
I think that does sound like it's illegal to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, it would be up to the court that's being hornswoggled to do something about it, right. I guess. Lawsuits, Post found lawsuits in California, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Texas. Half of them have been in the Baltimore area and Philadelphia, which means it's probably a company in that doing business in that area. It's fascinating. Fascinating. Anyway, that's a great story. And then the other story is a judge wants to make patent trolling a First Amendment issue.
Well, so this is interesting for me in that this is how far this has moved. So, you know, having been someone who's campaigned against software patents for a long time with people, and I set up fixpatents.org and handed it over to Engine Advocacy later on when they took up the cause.
And by the way, we're very helpful in the podcast. Troll patent troll case. Thank you for providing some prior art and so forth. I think it was very helpful.
But the thing is that it seems that actually has moved. We have the Alice judgment now, which is being used as the precedent here, and we're starting to see precedents being written up where basically just saying add a computer to something no longer makes it patentable. And those kinds of patents are being challenged, and basically this judge is taking it a bit further and saying there are ways of using patent trolling to suppress speech, and we don't want to do that. So that's
wow, that's this an is interesting take. Yeah.
So this is interesting, but it's also the thing for me is if you actually look at the trend on this is very encouraging because we've had lots of very very stupid patents, and many of them in around software, and the Samsung Apple one in the Supreme Court about design patents I think is also factitious, but this is. This is a sign that things are moving in a good direction, which is good. Or it may be just that, you know, computer firms are better at lobbying now than telco firms. There may be a sign of the shift in that direction.
We point you at Sarah Jong's article in the October 7th in The Verge. A judge wants to make patent trolling a First Amendment issue. If you want to understand this in a greater detail, it's good.
Sarah's very good at covering these things. She's a great legal writer.
Yeah, she was writing about, what was it? Oh, it was great.
Google and Oracle.
The Google she was Oracle in the live case. She did such a great live blog of that. Hey, we're out of time, but thank you so much. So much fun as always. This is one of the shows I really miss doing because it's, you know, I just keep asking.
We missed you.
What would Jeff say? Stacy was not here this week. I presume she'll be back next week. She was traveling somewhere where there wasn't an internet connection. But we will get her back on next week, I hope. Right, Karsten? She could be here next week? Yes. All right, good.
I will be in Frankfurt, so I'm going to try to look up the hotel.
And I see hear what they have internet in Germany now.
Well, you wouldn't know sometimes these hotels.
Well, you T-Mobile works there. It's owned by
Actually,
Telecom.
Yeah, your T-Mobile should work great. Should work great.
Well, I'll give you a Karsten. I will send you a whole list. But.
Good. Well, I hope we have you. If not, we will have a significant replacement of some sort.
someone worthy. Of
someone with your intellectual stature to replace you. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. He also writes at BuzzMachine.com. You'll find his articles on Medium frequently. And look for his books, great books, What Would Google Do?, Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek, which is a Amazon single, Kindle single. And the latest, Geeksparing Gifts, How to Reinvent News. Always a pleasure, JJ.
Always, sir.
Are you going back to Pennsylvania?
Yeah, every weekend.
Going to knock on some doors?
If you live in PA,
look for JJ.
Yep. I'm going to go canvas and get the boat out.
Yep. You know what? Getting the vote out and registering people, that's great. That's God's work.
It is. I'll confess it was scary the first time.
I'd be terrified.
Strangers' doors.
Yeah.
But do you say that you're
doing it partisanly, or just say, "Hey, I just like to register you"?
Yeah, I wear this.
Oh, okay. So they know. You got the hoodie. He's got the hoodie. Kevin Marks, IndieWebCamp.org. He is fighting for the right to party. KevinMarks.com if you want to know more.
The right to third party website.
The right to third party. I like it. Fight for the right to third party. Yeah. We do this show every Wednesday at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Come be in the studio with us. Email tickets at twit.tv if you'd like to. It's always nice to have a studio audience. But you can also watch live on our stream. We stream everything we do because we're just crazy that way. And you can also be in our chat room, irc.twit.tv. And that runs pretty much 24/7. If you can't be here live or on the internet, make sure you download an episode. Audio and video available at twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, you could subscribe that way and you won't miss an episode. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.